or 6660 gets registered. So good luck. Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you sister? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you sister?
For us to use our power. Please do not ask us for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below, that the low make.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
That all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. Good morning. This is Liz Brown. Oh, my goodness, we have so much stuff to talk about. So much stuff to talk about, and it's one more day. One more day till I find out what my African ancestry is. I have touched the soil of Africa. I've seen it with my own eyes. And it was home. I just can't imagine what it's going to feel like to be told my exact African ancestry and to find out about it on the show. I was talking to a friend last night, and I said, you know, it's really going to be probably one of the most magical moments that I've had on the air. So I am really, 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 really looking forward to that. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock, I will find out what my African ancestry is. What, down to a tribe. Down to a tribe. How exciting. And some lucky person, some lucky listener, some lucky, blessed person is going to get a $300 gift. A gift to find out their African ancestry. That's tomorrow at 8. So you have, what, how many more opportunities, Howard? How many more do we have? We have 17 more opportunities for you to be the 10th caller and get your name in the hat for the drawing tomorrow. So there are some odds out there for you. And don't cheat. One time for family. Don't call in for it. Different parts of your family. One time. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Some troubling news. Who said it on the show? Well, I believe one of my brilliant callers called in and said, well, Liz, if there is a $6.8 billion deal going down somewhere in the world, know that George W. Bush and or his friends are getting a piece of it. I said amen to that. And you doggone Skippy, follow the money, follow the money, follow the money. Well, looky, 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 looky. The Dubai firm that won the Bush administration backing, the backing that's so tough that George Bush said he will veto it if this deal doesn't go down. Did you notice my choice of words? If this deal doesn't go down. Okay? Because that's what he's talking about vetoing. A deal going down. So let's talk about this for a second. You want to know the connections. You want to know the moneyed connections. Huh. If there's a $6.8 billion sale going down, know that George Bush and his cronies, given the fact that they are, they put the C in corruption and cronyism. Who are the connections? Well, how about Treasury Secretary John Snow? His agency heads the federal panel that signed off on the $6.8 billion sale of this English company to a government-owned Dubai Ports World, giving it control of Manhattan's cruise ship terminal and Newark's container port. Aren't those two words enough to scare you? They have control over the container port. What could be put in a container? All right. Okay, Jon Snow headed the deal. And he heads the federal panel. What's the connection? Jon Snow was the chairman of the CSX rail firm that sold its own international port operations to Dubai in 2004 for $1.15 billion. And that was a year after Snow left Bush's cabinet. So understand this. You don't think that there's a conflict of interest here? You don't think that there's a conflict of interest here? He was the secretary, Treasury Secretary. I mean, he is the Treasury Secretary. This is another one of those Halliburton incest things. Incest Halliburton style. Huh. What's the other connection? David Sanborn. He runs Dubai World's European and Latin American operations, and he was tapped, picked, selected, chosen by Bush last month to head the U.S. Maritime Administration. Now, let me get this straight. George W. Bush is shoveling a load of stuff. George W. Bush is shoveling us a load of stuff. Understand what he's saying. He's saying, one, I'm going to veto if my deal don't go down. One. Two, he said, this has been completely vetted. We have looked through this and we wouldn't let anything happen without investigating it. Huh. Well, baby, you didn't know till after the deal went down. So you ain't exactly the one to tell us about how thorough the investigation was when you didn't know about a $6.8 billion deal to sell control of our ports to the Dubai interest. You didn't know about it till after the fact. So don't tell me about how you know other people were in the loop when you weren't in the loop. Okay? Don't tell me about that. And then... understand that no member of Congress, no United States senator had anything to do with this $6.8 billion deal that gives control of our ports, control of Newark's container port to this company. No United States, nobody that's accountable to you, because everybody who saw it ain't accountable to us. Their loyalty, their commitment, their love is to George W. Bush. So nobody who was accountable to us had a dang thing to do with this $6.8 billion deal that went down. And one of the people that did have something to do with the deal that went down is David Sanborn. Who is he? He runs the people who bought, who are part of the deal that went down. He runs their European and Latin American operation, and he's been chosen by Bush to run U.S. Maritime Administration. Tell me how we're protected. Incest runs so deep in this group that everybody should be shot and killed. Incest is so deep. If you were a family member and incest was this bad, you would want your remaining family members to be wiped off the face of the earth. It's that deep. That's how deep and dirty it is. The incest of Snow, the incest of Sanborn. Incest. That's what you would want. I'm against the death penalty. I don't believe in killing anybody. But a lot of people would respond in that kind of rage with that kind of act. Because it's that deep and dirty. It's that deep and dirty. It's awful. Snow and Sanborn. You open up the dictionary under incest and you see their pictures. Mm. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I hate to quote Lou Dobbs as some kind of oracle because I think he's kind of pompous and arrogant like Rush Limbaugh on the right. But, you know, according to Lou Dobbs' report last night, George Bush Sr., Neil Bush, and the Carlyle Group are behind this deal also.
I got
the Carlyle Group, I think they've set themselves up in this country, in Dubai, as some kind of empirical family or something. But, you know, these are the same people that brought us September 11th, the Carlyle Group. And let's not forget, Tony Blair is also involved in that Carlyle Group. But according to Lou Dobbs, Neil Bush and the Carlyle Group, headed by George Bush Sr., is behind this whole deal. So when this goofus comes up on this TV and defends this deal, supposedly he didn't even know anything about it.
I believe that he didn't know anything about it.
I do too. It just goes to show people he's nothing but a puppet. And who's really calling the shots up there? The Carlyle Group. You know, people better start waking up.
Thanks for your call, Steve.
Thank you very much.
454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call.
Yeah, I want to follow up on what Steve was saying. And you mentioned it yesterday, ma'am, good morning also, is to follow the money.
That's right.
Just watch what happened. And watch all of the people who are going to get around. And now they're going to pull Bob Dole out of his hole and other folks, like as if they supposed to have credibility to come up and
what are you talking about? They're pulling Bob Dole? I thought he was dead.
Well, they dug him up.
Okay.
Okay, just on this. Follow the money. And then if we do that, we'll find out, because when I heard Neil Bush was involved in this, and then you tell me that he's involved in a $6 billion deal and his brother didn't know about it, he is a lie.
Mm.
He is a lie. I know better.
Oh, I know why. I know how they got Bob Dole involved in this. He had one of those little blue pills.
Well, that's right.
But he popped a little Viagra. That's how he got back involved in this.
He was one around his neck instead of taking that what's that stuff called? When you have a heart attack, instead of taking that, he takes a blue pill. Yeah, that's crazy. Be good.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Lois, good morning.
Liz,
yes, ma'am.
Today on World News, they went to the port where these containers come in. The scary thing is, do you know they were interviewing these people, the guards that guard these containers, and this guard said, "Well, we inspect some of the containers, but we can't inspect all of them." So that tells me that these containers, a lot of them are coming through here without even being inspected.
We spend, this administration has spent no money on protection of our harbors. Now, they've spent money on some detention camps. They've spent billions of dollars on contracts for Halliburton, but how much money has this administration spent on keeping our harbor safe post 9/11? Relatively speaking, nada.
Well, you know, when that guy came on C-SPAN, I guess nobody really, either they didn't believe him or they didn't want to hear it. There was a man that came on C-SPAN a year ago, and he kept telling the people, he said, George Bush, his father, and the rest of them, are involved with the drug cartel. He said they're the ones behind. I don't know, Liz, this is all getting scary to me.
All right, Dee.
But, real quick. Did you hear the news yesterday, what the commentator said about these two boys that climbed this building? Did you hear about the two guys that climbed the building, right?
Okay.
Okay. Their assessment is, guess what? They said, well, boys will be boys.
Thanks for your call. Not about the crime. It's about those who stand accused of the crime. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Hello. I just wanted to say that Bob Dole works for the Duval Company or Duval.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he's the lobbyist.
He's the lobbyist for the Dubai Company?
Yes, Dubai Company.
Ain't that some stuff?
Okay, that's all I want to say.
Okay, that's his blue pill. Okay, all right. All right. Oh, my goodness, it's just, it's incestuous. It is incestuous. And what did I say yesterday? If there is a $6.8 billion deal going down, you know the players that are involved in this. You know who's going to get money up out of this. And I just got to say it one more time. The guy that George Bush picked to head the U.S. Maritime Administration is David Sanborn. And who is he? He currently runs DP World's European and Latin American operation. He runs them. He runs them. So he's the one that's checking into how good this deal is for the United States. Which one do you think he would check on? Whether it's good for his pocketbook or if it's good for your grandmama? I'm just asking. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call you need to get to me. We have much to talk about. Stay with me. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break.
Everything will be all right. But she doesn't hear a word that he says. Preoccupied, she's afraid. Afraid what they've been doing's not right. He doesn't know what to say. So he prays. Whatever, 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 whatever happens, don't let go.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at the Sowers traffic and weather. Sowers traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Westbound 64 from 159 to 157. Slow traffic due to an earlier construction. There's about a mile back up. Northbound 55 between Richardson and Rivas Barracks. No problems reported there. Eastbound 44 from 109 to the Merrimack River Bridge looks good. Eastbound 40 from Boone Bridge all the way in Timberlake Manor. Look for no problems to report there as well. Eastbound 70 at Zumbel and Cypress. No problems to report there. Northbound 270 from 55 to Big Bend looks good. Westbound 270 from Chain of Rocks Bridge all the way in Old Halls Ferry. Nothing to report. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Tudor Avenue all the way into the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for no problems to report. Westbound Kingbridge at Railroad Overpass into Cleese Landing looks good. And northbound Route 3 from Queenie onto the Poplar Street Bridge is looking good at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase 4 tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, look forward to mostly sunny skies, high in the mid-50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 30. Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-30s. Then on Saturday, partly sunny, colder with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 34 degrees under clear skies. Lambert Fields reporting 32. Wind chill is 28, so bundle up if you're going out to the bus stop this morning. That's a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Stay tuned. We'll have more news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. But up next, it's more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck.
Hi, it's Kevin
and Susan Farsi
of the Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
If you have a travel question, we'll try to find the answer for you.
Tell a friend and tune us in 2 to 4 Saturday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, I'm Brian Kay, sales manager at WGNU Radio. Right now, you're hearing my voice. What you could be hearing is yours, telling people about your business. Call me during regular business hours at 314-454-6660 and let me show you how effective and affordable radio ads can be on WGNU and how they can bring new customers to you. Once again, that's Brian Kay at 314-454-6660. We can replace this ad with yours.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger on AM 920 WGNU, the station that discusses what matters the most to you. Join me from 2 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you. Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Talk one or two. And if the right goes too far, it's because of the things you are. Beautiful sound, I love you. And if I need a moment's rest, give your lover the very best. Real out of
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. How are George W. Bush's, Boy George's friends responding to this port deal? Let me give you this data, because I want you to feel the tone. I want you to feel the temperament. I want you to feel the energy of this, of what's going on in the minds and the hearts of George W. Bush's friends. Republican Representative Sue Myrick. She is a huge Bush ally. She wrote him a one-sentence letter. And sometimes subtlety, sometimes things are too subtle for me to get, so help me with this, okay? Help me with this. United States Congresswoman, Republican Sue Myrick, wrote to George Bush and said, in regards to selling American ports to the United Arab Emirates, not just no, but hell no. Help me with the subtlety of that. Was she with him or against him? Was she with him or against him? That's what his friends are saying to him. That's what his friends are saying to him. You want to know how deep it goes? Libby Dole, she's a senator Republican from North Carolina. She said she's deeply concerned, even though her husband, had been hired as a lobbyist for the United Arab Emirates. Yeah, he's a lobbyist for them. Huh? That's how deep it goes. She said, I don't care what my husband's doing. I'm deeply concerned about this. Yeah, he bring home the bacon, but I'm deeply concerned about this. That's what his friends are saying. Huh? Ooh, and it gets deeper. The question that you all need to be asking yourself as you try to work yourself through this, work yourself through this issue. George Bush is telling the American people, chill out, my deal better go through or I'm vetoing it. Chill out. It's just another one of these times stupid Americans don't get what I'm doing. So just, and he's not even saying trust me, he's saying shut up. Don't you open your mouth, because I've decided this, and that's that. Okay? That's what George Bush is saying to you all out there. And mind you, he's saying that when he says that, he's also saying this issue has been properly vetted. Okay, this issue has been properly vetted. And again, I ask you the question of where was George Bush? He was out of the loop. But did you know this? The Secretary of Treasury was also out of the loop. They didn't know until several days ago about a state-owned Dubai company takeover of seaport facilities in New York and five other cities. White House spokesperson Scotty McCullen said yesterday, admitted yesterday, that Bush wasn't aware until last weekend that a panel headed by the Treasury had approved the $6.8 billion sale. Now, the Treasury Secretary, who has connections to the Dubai people, he says he didn't know till 3 days ago. Now, let's just resonate with this for 1 second, please. Let's just resonate with this for 1 second. The Treasury, the United States Treasury Secretary, whose department approved this $6.8 billion sale, he says he didn't know about it. How much money has to exchange hands before they catch your attention? Do we have to move $15 trillion before you say, okay, give me a memo on that? This was a $6.8 billion deal. And the Treasury Secretary says he didn't know about it. You know what? You a lie and the truth ain't in you. You a lie and the truth ain't in you. Snow was the chairman of the CXSX rail firm that sold its own international ports operations to DB Dubai World for $1.5 billion in 2004. Come on. You didn't know, you a lie, and the truth ain't in you. Ain't that something? Another friend of FOG, friend of George's. We want answers. We want to know what's going on. We've been totally shut out of the process. How you liked it? How that feel? How that feel, baby? The American people have been shut out of the process for 8 years almost. How does it feel now that you're just now feeling it? Question you should be asking yourself, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, boys and girls. The firestone over this Dubai-based company takeover of six United States ports raises legitimate concerns about the way foreign companies are screened to invest in the United States. You need to be asking yourself the question, what's the deal with the CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States? Okay? That's what you should be focusing on. How did the deal go down? And were the laws followed when the deal went down? Check it out. Did they skirt protocol when they approved this? In 1992, check this out. 1992, you hear me? 1992. The law governing the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States was updated to require a 45-day investigation. 45-day investigation for any state-backed company. By that wording, CFIUS appears to have flouted the law when it rubber-stamped the deal. The law as written was not carried out. The CFIUS did the 30-day review, and they said, well, the reason we didn't do 45-day, the more arduous 45-day investigation, is because another part of the law says that an investigation is unnecessary if the company is deemed not a security threat. Huh. These are amazing times. Along with clearing up the law's vagueness, there's a strong case to be made that the CFIUS should have more time to review a complex deal. At the present, an investigation automatically kicks in at the end of 30 days. A September 2005 report from the Government's Accountability Office found concern among the CFIUS members that the stigma of an investigation could dampen foreigners' desire to invest in the U.S. In particular, if an investigation isn't resolved by the end of 45 days, the president must make a decision and deliver a report to Congress. Now, here's what those words mean. Here's what those words mean. Those words mean that what George W. Bush says is bunk, that this was properly investigated. Because by their own rules and regulations, by their own concepts of the enforcement of their rules and regulations, these people are saying people won't invest in America if we investigate them too thoroughly. If there is a stigma. There is a stigma when you investigate a foreign company thoroughly. So we can't investigate a foreign company thoroughly because that will hurt the bottom line, which is the Almighty God, money. So when George W. Bush opens up his mouth and says to your face, that this was investigated thoroughly, it is impossible for it to have been investigated thoroughly because the interest is on the bottom line of getting foreign companies to invest in the United States, not protecting United States citizens from foreign companies that want to invest and control in the United States. How you like him now? How you like him now? You think your interests are first or the almighty green back? Huh. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. How you like him now? How you like him now? We're taking a break. I'll be back.
One always picks the easy fight. One praises fools, one's mother's light. One shifts from left to right. Politics, the art of the possible.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on a wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck. This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline, Washington. Some connections have been established between the Bush administration and the Dubai company that now has the contract to run six American ports. Treasury Secretary John Snow used to be chairman of CSX Railroad. That railroad sold its international port operations to Dubai Port World for over $1 billion just 2 years ago, right after Snow joined the Bush cabinet. The Treasury Department, incidentally, oversees the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., which made the deal with the Dubai company. Then there's also a gentleman by the name of David Sanborn. He was nominated by the president last month to head the U.S. Maritime Administration. He also runs Dubai Port World's European and Latin American operations. A 1993 law calls for an extended period of review for any deals that involve a foreign government that could have an impact on national security. This port deal was approved after only 25 days of review. Now, in a related development, old testimony from a congressional committee hearing in March of 2004 indicates the CIA had a chance to kill Osama bin Laden using an unmanned drone aircraft that had been tracking him in Afghanistan. This chance developed shortly after President Bush took office, but the agency was told to back off of that plan because at the time of the opportunity, he was in the company of the royal family of the United Arab Emirates. That was direct testimony from George Tenet, the man who was in charge of the CIA at that time. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
Did you hear? Jenny Peterson is celebrating Mardi Gras, New Orleans style. I'm Susan Smith-Harmon. Join me as we hook up with Jenny Friday at 1. She'll give us a GNU perspective of the rebuilding of the Crescent City live from New Orleans. That's Susan Smith-Harmon and Jenny Peterson reporting on progress in the Big Easy this Friday at 1 on WGNU, where we're discussing what matters most to you.
First Run Theater's 4th Annual Play Selection Reading Festival will be held this Saturday and Sunday at the Regional Arts Commission, 6128 Del Mar. The festival is broken into 5 sessions, Saturday at 9 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Admission is free. For a list of the plays to be read and more details, visit firstruntheater.com. Audience feedback will be used to select which plays will be produced this upcoming season. Dramatic news from WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears. Where else?
That's right. Where else are you going to get your shop on? Where else are you going to get your washers, your dryers, your DVD players, big and small, your tools, your tractors? How about your lawnmowers? Spring is just right around the corner. Go to the place where they have the best customer service. You're treated like a king, you're treated like a queen, because Jerome Williams loves you and your business. So, not only get your shop on, but get treated like a king or queen. Go on over to Sears in your own neighborhood. Full service Sears, everything the big Sears of the malls has, so does the Sears at the corner of Union and Natural Bridge. I'm Liz Brown. When you go to Sears, tell Jerome Williams I told you to.
Did you know that you can have the Leaf Slugger gutter protection system installed by United Homecraft and eliminate gutter cleaning forever? In fact, they guarantee it. The best part is, the Leaf Slugger gutter protection system installs over your existing gutters. If the winter weather has damaged your gutters and they need to be replaced, United Homecraft can do that too. With one phone call, you can stay off that dangerous ladder, stop cleaning the mess from your gutters, and save a bundle with a $250 instant rebate during their preseason sale going on now. The Leaf Slugger system will also keep you from spending thousands of dollars this spring in repairs to your home from water damage. Call United Homecraft today for a free, no obligation estimate at 1-888-731-2052. That's 1-888-731-2052. The Leaf Slugger Gutter Protection System by United Homecraft, one of St. Louis's oldest and largest contractors. United Homecraft is a participating member of the ITEX Trade Exchange. Your ITEX trade dollars are welcome.
Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Wonder why I even try. Well, I try because I like to finish what I start, and I have faith it can get better tomorrow.
want. Oh, oops. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. Oh, my goodness, we have so much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up. Get to me. Barbara.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
This is unbelievable. It is amazing. How do you think this is all going to work out with all of these new things coming out, people involved with the administration?
You know, what I think what is fascinating, Barbara, is this. It's just fascinating to watch. This administration hasn't been able to get any traction since Katrina, for real. Now, they were going across the country pounding into Americans' heads, it's okay if we spy on you. It's okay because we're not spying on you. We're spying on them. And they got a little bit of traction then. But then Dick Cheney shot his friend in the face and the heart. So they got off track again. And now they're tone deaf politically because they could have stopped this port issue a week ago, 2 weeks ago. But they refused to acknowledge it. It's like every single time the administration tries to get some traction on, they're not getting any. Mm. It's just, I think that these are the days of revelation, that we are being shown, and through no help by the Democrats, we're being shown, the American people are being shown stuff that they've refused to see or didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are amazing times, Barbara.
It's amazing. I have one question to ask you that's on a different subject about the Geno Project that you're advertising.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with the National Geno Project?
A little bit.
Theirs is $99. Would that help African Americans? Because they send your kid out through through that company. It's that National Geographic Geno Project.
No, this is more specific.
It's more specific.
More specific. It takes you to your tribe.
Oh, okay, so it would only be for African-Americans.
People tracing their African roots.
Okay. All right. Well,
and I'm not saying there are people, I mean, there are white people that believe that they have, that do have African roots in their family. This would be able to trace African roots.
Okay.
That's what this is specifically. It's a larger database. It's my understanding that it's a larger database for Africans.
Okay. Well, that's what I want to understand. And the other thing, remember I told you last week.
And also, wait a minute, also, Barbara, as a person of African descent, I'm always going to support a black business.
Oh, absolutely.
First and foremost.
I just came across this online and I wondered what the difference was.
Okay.
Okay, and I was just going to say, like I said last week, you know what crackheads do? They start selling stuff.
Yes, they do.
Their friends are all in there with them.
That's right. It's a mess. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
454-0400 is my phone number. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Yeah, Liz.
Yes.
This whole port issue thing and this company over in Dubai.
Yes.
You know, you remember the Michael Moore movie? And he talked about there is a business connection between the Bush 1 and
the Saudis.
Former Secretary Baker.
Yeah.
And there was a part in that movie where he mentioned the name of that particular company. And I just wonder, I mean, maybe I'm speculating, but I'm just wondering, did that company, because it's a huge lobbying group or something that these guys are a part of, that has something to do with either the United Arab Emirates Saudi Arabia. So I just wonder if anybody out there remembers that part of the movie.
I'm going to go back and look and watch the movie, Ed. I'm going to go back and watch and see if there is a connection. That's a good question.
All right, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. You're on the wake-up call.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Brown.
Korean veteran, good morning.
I just want to say this right quick. I knew it was something funny yesterday when I heard the lady that in Congress that heads up the Foreign Investment Committee up in the White House in Congress. She said she hadn't that her committee hadn't received any information. She didn't know anything about it.
Uh-huh.
So when you follow the dollar, you know, I mean, you can always find out. But I heard you singing, and I like that because you know what trash.
All right.
I think I'm in your trash.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
15 more slots, y'all. 15 more slots to find out it. To find out if you can be part of the drawing tomorrow to trace your African ancestry. 15 more times before tomorrow at 8. Don't miss an opportunity. I'm Liz Brown. I'll be back with, my goodness, Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith. Stay with us. Revolution in the air,
matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
The latest from the ABC News. I'm Daria Alder. More demonstrations today in Iraq as religious and political leaders try and keep the country from spiraling into civil war.
This morning, Iraqi police were on the streets before daylight. A shorter curfew is in effect. U.S. military officials say they are prepared to assist if called. So far, today's demonstrations are reportedly peaceful. But the explosion that brought down the Golden Dome of the Holy Samara Mosque reverberates across Iraq. New details this morning about reprisals and word that 40 bodies were found in one spot near Baghdad.
ABC's David Curley in Baghdad. A White House report is due out in about an hour from now with its take on what went wrong after Hurricane Katrina. The emphasis is expected to be on how to prevent the next debacle.
The president has also made a commitment to the citizens of the Gulf Coast that we will be a full partner in the rebuilding and recovery effort, and that process continues.
White House spokesman Scott McClellan. Thousands of Katrina victims, however, are about to become homeless. Again, the cruise ships they've been living on while their homes are being repaired leave next week. This guy's packing up.
We have a place. It's not fully sheetrocked, but we have no alternative.
Many staying on the ships are police and firefighters. A Senate panel is ready to hear more about a plan that would give an Arab-owned company control of six U.S. ports.
High-ranking officials from the Pentagon, Homeland Security, and the Treasury Department will make the case for the ports deal before Senator John Warner's Armed Services Committee. As the flurry of angry congressional statements continues, Congresswoman Sue Myrick, normally a Bush loyalist, sent a one-sentence letter to the president saying not just no on the ports deal, but, quote, hell no.
ABC's Vic Ratner in Washington. The death toll continues to rise after a roof collapse at a busy Moscow market. Now at least 38 people are confirmed dead. This is ABC News.
When my baby left for college, I took some classes of my own.
Left, right, turn.
Dance classes. That's when I started needing a pain reliever for my sore legs. Then I upgraded my computer and had to get a headache medicine, too. For every new pain, I had a different pain reliever. But now I'm all Advil. It's my every pain reliever. Advil works wherever I hurt. And nothing's proven stronger on tough pain than Advil. I'm all Advil. Are you all Advil?
Use as directed compared to OTC pain relievers.
Criminal justice is one of America's fastest-growing career fields. With a degree in criminal justice, you can pursue exciting entry-level opportunities. At the ITT Tech School of Criminal Justice, they teach you the fundamentals of the criminal justice system. Classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call now for an ITT Tech brochure. 1-800-851-4499. 1-800-851-4499.
Not offered at every campus. Check the ITT Tech for a list of programs offered.
Sasha Cohen heads into tonight's Olympic women's final. Well-rested, the figure skater skipped both of her practices yesterday. A gold medal is on the line, and the American is in front by the slimmest of margins. Well, we're still waiting for that standout hero to emerge from the games. Maybe it could be this speed skater who's been in the shadow of some of his more vocal teammates.
In stark contrast to the bickering of Chad Hedrick and Shawnee Davis, the hot-dogging of Lindsay Jacobellis, and the faltering of Bodie Miller, stands speed skater Joey Cheek.
The Olympics should be more than just about sport. It should be about, you know, having the chance to come together and in peace and try and spread some ideals that we believe in.
Cheek earned two medals here and donated his winnings to charity.
I'm surprised more athletes don't do this because we live very blessed but selfish lives.
Cheek has pledged $40,000 to Right to Play, an organization that helps kids in impoverished countries. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, Torino.
And I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brian Meyer with your WGNU news update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a New York man is dead after a wrong-way crash on I-44 in Franklin County. The Missouri Highway Patrol reports that 21-year-old Joshua Paquette of Weedsport, New York, was headed eastbound on I-44 near Union when he tried to pass a tractor-trailer on the median. He lost control and crossed into westbound traffic, colliding head-on with a pickup truck. Paquette was killed instantly. The driver of the pickup was airlifted to a St. Louis hospital with serious injuries. A St. Louis area man charged with kidnapping his daughter and then leaving the country is back in the United States. Arlen Hill is in custody in Los Angeles and awaiting extradition to Missouri. Hill allegedly abducted his daughter in 2002 when she was 17 months old and took her to New Zealand, where authorities found them in 2005. The girl was safely reunited with her mother. Some local residents are standing with citizens of a Peruvian city as they look for environmental reforms from a St. Louis-based company. The local Presbyterian church organization, Joining Hands Against Hunger, will hold a vigil this evening in support of the citizens of La Oroya, Peru, where the Doe Run Company owns a smelter. Reverend George Humbert, the chairman of Joining Hands Across Hunger, says St. Louis University researchers conducted an independent study last year on the children of La Oroya and discovered alarming results.
The toxic levels within the bloodstream of children and within the environment is well above what's allowed by the World Health Organization.
The St. Louis vigil will begin at 5:30 this evening at the old courthouse downtown. At the same time, vigils will be held in Lima and Huancayo, Peru, to ask the Peruvian government to enforce its environmental cleanup agreements with Doe Run. Finally this hour, the public is being reminded to not ignore chest pains. This is in response to a recent study that suggests many people with chest pain may misinterpret the cause of their symptoms and the actions they should take. Dr. John Bonham, the senior faculty advisor at Emory University's Grace Crumrollin School of Public Health, says you should get to the emergency room immediately if you experience chest pains. Heart attack risk factors include smoking, obesity, and a family history of heart disease. February is American Heart Month. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Accountemps, the world's first and largest specialized financial temporary staffing firm for accounting and financial professionals. Call or visit them today at Accountemps.com. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Westbound 255 at Jefferson Barracks Bridge is a disabled vehicle. Left lane is blocked. Northbound 55 at Weber Road. Look for an accident. Left lane is blocked and is backing up through Lindbergh. Westbound 70 is closed at mile marker 128 in Columbia due to an accident. Eastbound 44 between 141 and Geyer, no problems reported. Eastbound 70 from 370 from Cave Springs, stop and go traffic. Northbound 270 from Granville to 44, look for heavy volume going on there as well. Westbound 270 from Canal Bridge all the way into Old Halls Ferry looks good. Eastbound 70 at K and 79, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason Road, look for slow traffic as well. Westbound 5570 from Tudor Avenue onto the PSB, look for everything to be running smoothly. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank to Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 from Monsanto to the PSB looks good. And Chesterfield Airport Road at Olive Street Road, look for an accident. Left lane is blocked in each direction. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase four tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive three complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. For today, mostly sunny, high in the mid-50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 30. For Friday, pretty much the same. Partly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-30s. And on Saturday, partly sunny, colder with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 34 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 33. The wind chill out there makes it feel like it's 27. Bundle up if you're going outside. It's time now for the award-winning Wake Up Call with your host, Liz Brown. In fact, it's Eye on the Lou with special guest co-host Irene J. Smith. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the Wake Up Call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck. Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the Wake Up Call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. Use our power. Please do not ask us for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember?
I remember saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equality.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
It's time now for Eye on the Loo. Redistricting, hand-picked school board members, up-and-coming elections, recalls, battles in Jefferson City, knockdown dragouts at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m. when Irene J. Smith joins Liz Brown on the Wake Up Call for an up-close personal examination of the comings and goings in the St. Louis region. That's Eye on the Loo, Thursday.
Welcome, welcome to Eye on the Loo. This is Liz Brown, Irene J. Smith. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz, and to your listening audience.
How are ya?
Good, real good.
Good. All right. Well, let's talk about some stuff. Let's talk about, let's do some updating. Updating. Let's, updating. How about the election law story that we brought last week? Tell folks what we talked about a little bit last week, and let's bring them up to date.
Last week we talked about Senate Bill 1014, I believe, and another Senate bill, I believe, was 730, which would actually require anyone who wanted to vote to show a state ID. That passed
the Senate. Out of committee.
Out of committee.
And that's a drastic change in the way things are done. It's a drastic change in terms of, it amounts to a poll tax.
Yeah. It does. Very definitely does. I mean, here you have a situation where in the past you could provide a utility bill.
Birth certificate.
Birth certificate. Any of that. Now, they have this, like, provision because of criticisms about individuals that couldn't pay for identification. They said, well, if you get a doctor's statement.
What is your doctor's statement going to say?
That's what's the glitch, you know, as a... State Rep. Yaffe Edelman said, that's a glitch in the law. I mean, your doctor gives a doctor's statement. I mean, your doctor can talk about your condition, but since when can your doctor talk about your financial situation?
And so, The answer is you get a note from your doctor that allows you not to have to pay for your, I guess you're basically your national ID card that they're asking for, your ID card that your birth certificate is not good enough to allow you to vote.
Apparently not. And what's a little bit more ludicrous is that it's my understanding that the election board will perhaps have some equipment, you know.
Perhaps.
Because, of course, the St. Louis Election Board didn't bother to respond to what fiscal impact, at least according to the records as of February the 9th, had not responded to what fiscal implications would come about as a result of, you know, if this becomes law. You can use your birth certificates and your utility bill to get an ID.
Which is crazy, and it doesn't make sense. But the other piece of this that's scary, and the reason why it's important to update on this issue, Irene, is because this is being fast-tracked.
It's faster. It's going to be if it passed, if it goes into law, it's to take effect immediately.
So for the April elections. Conceivably, but definitely for the August election.
Definitely for the August election.
And what is interesting about that is as I'm reading comings and goings with the Democratic Party all across this country with regard to what Bush is doing and not doing and how vulnerable the Republicans are and how, despite being a real opposition party, the Democrats are poised to make some gains, even despite all their bad actions.
And one of those gains is thought to be in Missouri.
Absolutely. Yes. They're saying that the race in Missouri is the one that they have all their eyes on. The polls are showing that Claire McCaskill is leading Jim Talent by one vote. I mean, by one percentage point.
Exactly.
And so it's a very closely watched race. So if they're able to fast track this and get so that you can't even register to vote unless you have one of these ID cards. So
right.
So it stops people dead in their tracks.
Right.
And then also the other piece of the bill where you can't pay anybody to go out and register people to vote unless they are get approved by the Secretary of State.
Approved by the Secretary of State, you know, as a what do they call it?
Agency, entity, or something
of that sort. So then if an individual, and we know that organizing costs, and it costs to have people to go door to door. Sure, people take advantage of it. That's part of the situation. That's why we have an election board that's supposed to look into those matters. And, you know, right now we have an election board that doesn't purge voter records in any type of timely fashion. So that in and of itself is a problem. I am hopeful, you know, the national NAACP is looking at this. Supposedly they're going to challenge it. Supposedly ACLU, who is opposed to it, as well as the League of Women Voters is opposed to it.
It is really, really problematic because normally what would happen is that they would wait until November for this to take effect. But if they start it as soon as August, it will impact August elections. But more importantly, it will impact any effort to organize and to get people registered to vote for this huge November race.
Exactly. And I spoke with Senator Maida Coleman last week. In fact, right after the show, I spoke with her, and I indicated to her, you know, our conversations as well as conversations from individuals in the community. And she said she had made it a point of saying to her colleagues who had, I think earlier that week or the week before, had filibustered legislations by the Republicans to prohibit project labor agreements. And certainly if they could do a filibuster to shut down that the attempt by the Republicans to pass project labor, a ban on project labor agreements, then certainly something as key as this certainly should be filibustered, and she agreed.
And the issue for all of the elected officials out there is, how do you get that to happen? Well, the first thing that you do is you inform your constituents.
Exactly.
You bring
exactly.
these issues home.
Exactly.
People need to know
exactly.
about this kind
exactly.
of stuff. State Representative Yaphet El Amin, good morning.
Good morning, Liz and Irene. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm glad you all are continuing to champion this issue. This is an extremely important issue in the state of Missouri. We have approximated 170,000 people currently without the type of identification that this piece of legislation requires. So we're looking at disenfranchisement of a lot of people if we don't stop this bad bill.
And if now if are we understanding this correctly, Representative, that this would also include people that are attempting to register to vote?
Now, I am not sure of that. I haven't read anything in the bill that speaks about registration from that perspective. Now, there are some places in the legislation that makes one have to register as a voter registrar with the Secretary of State's office if you register 10 or more people.
What?
And you have to register as a voter registrar every time there's an election if you are wanting to register 10 or more people to vote.
So let me get this straight. A little senior citizen going through their senior home, getting some of the seniors to register, if there's more than 11, if there are 11 seniors there that need to be registered, they have to go and go fill out some form somewhere?
Oh, yeah. You have to get approved by the Secretary
approved.
Of State's office.
Approved. And how long does this approval process take?
Now, that has not been clarified. You know, the Secretary of State's office, Robin Cornahan, has gone on record in opposition to the bill. And even in addition to that, if you all recall, we just passed a couple of years ago the Help America Vote Act.
Exactly.
So our election boards all throughout the state haven't even come into compliance with that law yet. And they are struggling to do that because that's the new voting machines and the other changes in the election procedures that the city of St. Louis is not even prepared for now. So putting this on top of this will just equal disaster for our community.
So this voter registrar piece, is this part of this bill that was passed out of committee last week?
Yes, mm-hmm. It sure is. There, the part about the 10 people registering or registering more than 10 people having to be approved by the Secretary of State's office to do that, that's in this provision. And the provision that you all were speaking of earlier dealing with the doctor's statement, that's tied to issuing the non-driver's license. So they're saying that they'll have this mobile unit or mobile unit set up to go to different senior facilities or facilities of people that are disabled, but you have to have a doctor's statement saying that you are physically unable to drive in order for the state to pay for the non-driver's license for you.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight, Yaphet. So they're going to look a 95-year-old woman in a wheelchair in the face and say to her, I need a statement from your doctor that you can't drive before we can register you to before you can vote?
Most definitely. That same senior that was able to use her utility bill last year along with her voter registration card, they will look you dead in the eye and say, if you do not have this, you will not be able to get the identification needed to vote. So this is very serious for our community. And the
yeah, but let me ask you this. So this does not, it did not address the issue of individuals who could not afford to obtain identification.
Well, that's how they're saying that they will address that issue. They will allow for you to have an opportunity to have an opportunity to obtain a non-driver's license with that statement.
Wait a minute. How does that? Let's say I can drive, but I just can't afford to buy one. Is that issue addressed?
Mm-mm. The only way that it's addressed, and if you play this scenario out, you go up to the voting polls to vote. You don't have a state identification. Oh, we'll pay for you to get one, but you need to get a doctor's statement saying that you're unable to drive. Most people who are unable to drive are walking to the polls or getting a ride. So now you have to leave to get a ride to go to the doctor's office. And if you're those people that are cut off Medicaid, you can't get in to see a doctor.
But wait a minute. Let's say that you can drive. Let's say that you can drive, but you simply cannot afford the ID. And you can't afford the ID for your daughter. You can't afford the ID for your son. We're not just talking about you. We could be talking about an entire family of people that cannot afford the IDs. What is the provision in this piece of legislation that addresses that directly?
There's not a provision in place for you. If you are a disabled person, and this is another reason why Paracry and the other organizations that represent people with disabilities need to be vocal. They will allow for you to have a provisional ballot, and we need to be careful about the provisional ballots because it may satisfy one's need to vote, but we don't know if that ballot will ever be counted.
Exactly. So talk about your second-class status.
Oh, it's clearly in effect. This is literally rolling Missouri back to the days of Jim Crow.
Is this catching national attention, Yafit?
I've seen some movement, and the media is just now starting to pay more attention to the bill. I believe the more our organizations come out in opposition to the bill, the more it will catch national attention. But this is an opportune time, and we have to get out on these issues. I heard Irene say she spoke to Senator Coleman. They have an opportunity in the Senate to kill this bill.
And how? And walk people through how that would happen.
Well, just like last week when the senators, there were four senators that band together and they took turns to each one get up and speak for several hours on the bill at a time, and the Republicans pulled the PLA bill off of the calendar and until they made some concessions that were palatable for the people who were against it. And that same type of concept needs to happen.
So people need to be calling their senators right now telling them to filibuster this and to kill this awful bill.
Most definitely, because this is about low-income people. This is about seniors. This is about minority people. And we want to see people stand up and talk against this, not because it's tied to any labor, not because it's tied to money, because it's tied to people.
Exactly. I want to thank you very much.
Well, yes, we thank you. Thank you for keeping the community abreast of this issue, because had it not been for Liz and I's research and then subsequently Jamila bringing my attention to your efforts, you know, this could have, again, slipped through the cracks.
And we can't let this slip. This is going to be critical for August elections, and it's going to take – they can't pass this with an emergency clause without the Democrats. It's 109 votes. So we need to see Democrats stand up against this issue and not assist this effort to disenfranchise Missouri's voters.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, ladies.
454-0400 is my phone number. These are troubling times.
Very troubling
these
times.
Are very, very troubling times. And let me I want to get to a couple of our sponsors here, if you don't mind. We have a new sponsor here for Eye on the Loo. Here's an opportunity for you seniors. There is a wonderful senior center at 5341 St. Louis, Missouri. The phone number is 383-4863, San Francisco Temple Multiplex. I'm talking about table tennis. I'm talking about exercise 3 days a week, outings around St. Louis, monthly health screenings, guest speakers, arts and crafts, games, and much, much more. Much, much more. Free hot lunches. Come on out to the Senior Center. Come out to the Senior Center at San Francisco Temple Multiplex. This is 5341 Emerson, St. Louis, Missouri, 383-4863. Hours are 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And we welcome you as a brand new sponsor for Eye on the Loo. We're going to take a break, folks. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. Irene, we'll be back.
All right.
All right. Stay with us. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. The toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget that we are archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. You need to get up. You need to get to us. We have much to talk about.
St. Louis, 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Account Temps. Westbound 255 at Jefferson Barracks Bridge, disabled vehicle, left lane's blocked. Westbound 70 at mile marker 128 in Columbia is closed due to an accident. Eastbound 270 at Lilac, there's an accident. Left lane is closed. A brief backup approaching the accident site. Westbound 70 at Warrington, which is Route 47, look for an accident involving an overturned vehicle. Eastbound 44 at 141 in Guyer, no problems reported there. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry and 44, heavy volume going on. Westbound 270 from 367 to West Florissant, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 70 from K to 79, look for slow traffic. Northbound 55 from Rivas Barracks to Weber Road, look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason, look for slow traffic there as well. Northbound 270 at Big Bend and Doherty Ferry, you have sluggish traffic going on there as well. Westbound 5570 from 64 onto the PSB, expect delays. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank to Laclede's Landing looks good. And northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, no problems there. And westbound 64 between Ball Avenue and 5570 split looks good. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Account Temps, the world's first and largest specialized financial temporary staffing firm. For accounting and financial professionals, call or visit them today at accounttemps.com. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly sunny, high in the mid-50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 30. Friday, pretty much the same, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-30s. And on Saturday, partly sunny, colder with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 34 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 34 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck. We have issues that matter most to you, and so does Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Dr. Laura is heard Monday through Friday afternoons from 2 to 4 here on WGNU and provides advice and solutions to a wide range of problems affecting people just like you. Be a part of the program by calling 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Get a new attitude. Listen to Dr. Laura Schlesinger weekdays from 2 to 4 right here on AM 920 WGNU, the station with issues that matter most to you. No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
Once upon a time in a small cottage lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our
house!
Exclaimed Chuck. That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba, said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged onto energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Irene J. Smith. Let's close out our updates with Pimp Your Ride.
Well, as you know, we talked about the noise bill that was pending in the Board of Aldermen, Board Bill 81, Committee Substitute, sponsored by Craig Smith. Well, this Friday, that bill, after going back to committee, came back to the floor, and it passed overwhelmingly. In fact, there were only 5 aldermen to vote against it.
And tell folks why this bill is so problematic.
It's problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, it says if you can hear music from the car from 75 feet away, which is a short distance. It really is. And your car can be seized.
They can snatch your car. They can take your car. So if you're in summertime, you have the windows rolled down in your car, and they hear, and a cop hears your music, it's going to be his word against your word, and he could snatch your car right then.
And it's interesting that once the business community that it does the installation for the larger speakers, once they roared their head, that piece of legislation, which was rightful, it should have been taken out. Because, as you recall, the original legislation would permit seizure for just having the speakers in there, whether or not they were on or anything of that nature. So that provision was taken out. You know, Craig Smith says that...
And he's a lawyer, for crying out loud. Yeah. He's a lawyer for... Well, he has a law degree, for crying out loud.
Well, you know, he's saying that people are moving out of the city because of loud music.
Oh, shut up.
Well, I mean, that's what he says.
And I'm saying, shut up.
He says people are moving out of the city for loud music. But I think the real problem is enforcement of the existing noise ordinance by the police. And I think the police have somewhat become disenchanted because they issue violations and then they go over to city court. And then the charges get amended to non-moving violations, and the individuals end up paying less money for the non-moving violation than they would pay for the moving violation.
And they can take somebody's car.
Yeah.
They can take
Which is very problematic. And, you know, quite often,
Francis,
we try...
Francis Clay hasn't signed off on this yet, has he?
He hasn't. It's on his desk. It is on the mayor's desk. Initially, the mayor's office had some problems with it, I guess, as it impacted the business community. That's my understanding. Perhaps they had others, but it was my understanding that they found it problematic because it allowed the seizure just for the, you know, the mere fact that you had a certain type of speaker in your car could be seized. So, of course, the business community that is involved in installing those speakers called the mayor's office, and then as a result, we saw some movement where the bill was actually brought back. Those who voted on what we call the side that wins, the prevailing side, voted to send the bill back to committee.
And I guess there's I know that there's a bigger constituency out there that owns cars than people that put speakers in cars. And everybody who owns a car should be up in arms about this and should be calling Francis Slay's office, because this is Nazism. This is outrageous that they can take your car because they say you're playing your radio too loud. They can take your car. Not just issue you a ticket, but take your car. That's crazy. They could take your grandmama's car because she listened to gospel too loud. Yeah. So
and it's interesting. If the police vehicle is next to your car and he hears your music, then how could he then take the position that somebody 75 feet away could hear it?
But you still got to get your car out of hock.
You still got to get
you
it out of hock.
You got to hire an attorney to get you.
Minimum fine, I think, is $250. You know, previously there was legislation that under Section 17, where if you got a noise violation, you also would get points on your driver's license. So then, you know, as you get more points, that is, if you were convicted, then you would lose your license, but at least there was a process. But this is very problematic because it gives it gives a lot of discretion to the police, which the way things are evolving, particularly in our community, that's very problematic.
Nobody should have the right to be able to take your car on a he said, she said thing. Nobody should be able to do that, let alone for having your radio on. That's outrageous. I got to get to our sponsors again. We have our wonderful sponsor, Hood Goods. I'm talking about Hood Goods. Where are they? They're at 12100 Bell Fountain. I'm talking about Bell Fountain and Parker. Bell Fountain and Parker. They're open Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8:30. Sunday, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. They carry Dickies for men and women. Vibes, apple bottom jeans, Echo Red, Girl Bot, fitted hat, shoes, Timberland t-shirts, men and women coats, thermal t-shirts, tall tees. They have a special going on right now. Regular t-shirts, 5 for $20. Hood Goods. They're a sponsor of Eye on the Loo. You need to get to them. 438-8400. That's their number. They're at Parker and Bell Fountain. That's 12100 Bell Fountain. Hood Goods. Check them out. And don't forget our other sponsor of Eye on the Loo. We're talking about the Senior Center at San Francisco Temple Multiplex. That's 5341 Emerson. Their number is 383-4863. You need to ask for Ms. Yvonne Henderson. Exercise 3 days a week. Outings all around St. Louis. Table tennis, monthly health screenings, arts and crafts, games, free hot lunches. They even do a little billiards there and much, much, much more.
And you don't forget dominoes.
Don't forget dominoes.
Don't forget Scrabble.
Don't forget Scrabble right there at the Senior Center. This is a wonderful opportunity for the seniors to gather and meet and have fun things to do. Give them a call at 383-4863. Ask for Ms. Yvonne Henderson. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. San Francisco Temple Multiplex Senior Center at 5341 Emerson, 383-4863. All right, Miss Irene J. Smith, what else we got? Let us move on to our topic here.
Oh, man. We got a lot of action going on in the 28th Ward. Mm-hmm. You know, we were hoping to have someone that would talk to us about it, because understand, you know, we see picketing in certain other areas, downtown in front of City Hall, but as my understanding, this past Saturday, there was picketing at a meeting outside of the Business Association dealing with development at Euclid and Lindo.
We brought this up last week.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about
this is all about Lida Cruzan.
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
And basically the members of her community have come together with this group called Citizens for Responsible Development. And basically what they're saying is you don't need a TIF for this area. You know, this is a stable area. A lot of people are trying to develop in this area. So why is this guy getting a TIF? And why are we building this tall building in a historical district? So they are busy at work, is my understanding. There's an article in the Central West End Word that I haven't had a chance to get. It came out yesterday where this is being taken to task. You know, folks are calling people saying, why are you picking on my friend Lida?
Mm. All right, so there's more to come on that. More to come. Let me get to a caller or two. Leroy.
Good morning, lady.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a question. I got a question and a comment. First is going to be a comment on this noise ordinance. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love my city. I moved back to St. Louis after being gone for 20 years. But this noise ordinance is nothing new compared to cities like Oakland, California, Seattle, Washington. My big concern, just like you stressed, Liz, was the ability to take your car.
That's the only thing we're talking about. We're not talking about noise ordinance.
We're not talking about, because there's an existing noise ordinance, and having been a former judge for city courts, right, I can tell you that police officers were writing noise ordinances, violations,
right,
but they get over to city courts and they get amended to non-moving violations, and so, you know, you pay a fine at less than what the minimum fine was for the noise ordinance. So I think, number one, Mr. Craig Smith should have at least find out what the status of the current enforcement is, and before you say we've got to do something about this and
take a car
and result to a more restrictive approach. It's dangerous, and I think it's going to be problematic.
Now, my child personally experienced that in Seattle, Washington, but you will get your car taken after the second offense. Just like if they find a beer can in your car is impounded immediately. There's no questions.
And then to me, again, anything that they snatch your car on, there needs to be more of a process.
Okay.
Because
also, my question. Mm-hmm. Recently, I read an article. I don't know if it was
quickly,
in the Post or our little local paper to give out for free here on the South Side.
Quickly, Leroy.
But what's the status with Pure Igo? Have you heard anything?
There's no development.
All right, thanks for your question.
The Pruitt Igoe site will have to be cleaned up. There is some discussion about developing it. I know Richard Barron is interested in doing so, but the site will need to be cleaned up before it can be developed. And cleaned up, I mean, there are some hazardous waste there that needs to be cleaned up.
All right. We're going to take another break. I'm here with Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith. Irene, we'll take a break.
Ooh.
We'll be right back at it.
Register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck.
Are you hungry? You need to go to Sweetie Pies, 4270 Manchester, 9481 West Florissant. Fried chicken wing, beef liver, baked chicken, pork chops, everything good that you want to eat. Sweetie Pies, 4270 Manchester, brand new location. Check them out. Makes you want to kiss your mama.
Brought to you this hour by
Alliance Financial Group. How do the rich get rich? Let Alliance Financial Group show you how. Call 381-8967.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Washington. A report on the International Press Service says the United States and Iran were cooperating to work against al-Qaeda and its Taliban supporters in Afghanistan in late 2001 and early 2002. The U.S. wanted Iran's help to oust the Taliban and put in a stable government once it invaded Afghanistan and started the war on terror. Iran had helped to set up the Northern Alliance resistance movement with money and arms, something the U.S. was not willing to do. When the American invasion took place, secret talks began between Iranian diplomats and the State Department and National Security Council members on how to make a regime change happen in Afghanistan. The Northern Alliance was a major reason the Taliban was ousted from power by the middle of December of 2001. The Northern Alliance then demanded 60% of the seats in a new government, but compromised only at the urging of Iran. The State Department saw this was a chance to work with Iran to stabilize Afghanistan and suggested sharing intelligence information with Tehran to conduct border raids to mop up al-Qaeda members and leaders who had fled into Pakistan and Iran. The CIA wanted to go along with the cooperation, but then the faction of hardliners in the president's cabinet, led by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, refused to offer any cooperation and, in fact, convinced the president to mention Iran as one of the axes of evil in his State of the Union message in January of 2002. The Bush advisors in this cabal convinced the president that when the Taliban and al-Qaeda fled across the border to Iran, that constituted giving safe haven to the enemies of the United States, even though it was not based on any type of intelligence analysis. Iran had increased troop strength along its borders and had in fact captured a large number of terrorists. But when the cooperation stopped with Washington, Tehran decided to just let them go back to wherever they had come from. Even as late as the spring of 2002, Iran set up a meeting with the U.S. and a Northern Alliance general who said he would be able to provide 20,000 men for the Afghan army if the United States would just contribute minimal help. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice were briefed on this latest request, but they never responded, and yet another window of opportunity for an effective response to terrorism was lost. This is your wake-up call global news update, brought to you this hour by Alliance Financial Group.
Would you like to earn $500 to $2,500 a month? Have you been turned down for a real estate loan because of bad or poor credit? Would you like to invest in real estate but you don't know how to get started? All you need is the right strategy. Let Alliance Financial Group show you how with the free financial presentation today at 7 p.m. at the Airport Hilton Hotel. Seating is limited, so call 381-8967, 381-8967.
No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
Hood goods. I'm talking about Dickies for men, women, vibes, apple bottoms, echo red, girl bod, fitted hats, shoes, Timberland t-shirts, men and women coats, thermal shirts, tall tees. How about this special at Hood Goods? Regular t-shirts, five for $20. Where is Hood Goods? 12100 Bell Fountain. I'm talking about Bell Fountain and Parker. Monday through Thursday, 11 to 8. Friday through Saturday, 10 to 8. 30 Sunday, 12 to 6. You want more information? How to get to Hood Goods? What they got? 438-8400. Hood Goods, a sponsor of Eye on the Loop.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Hey, y'all looking for a good place for your granny to go to hang out and have a good time? How about the Senior Center at 5341 Emerson? Table tennis, exercise 3 days a week, outings all around St. Louis, monthly health screenings, guest speakers, arts and crafts, games, dominoes, a little bit of cribbage, how about some billiards, and much, much more. That's the San Francisco Temple Multiplex Senior Center. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. How do you get to them? Call 383-4863, 383-4863. Ask for Ms. Yvonne Henderson. That's the Senior Center. It's a good hangout for the seniors. 383-4863. Call Yvonne Henderson. Are you hungry? You need to go to Sweetie Pies, 4270 Manchester, 9481 West Florissant. Fried chicken wing, beef liver, baked chicken, pork chops, everything good that you want to eat. Sweetie Pies, 4270 Manchester, brand new location. Check them out. Makes you want to kiss your mama.
Target aircraft,
most advanced and highly mobile surface-to-air weapon systems utilized by the U.S. Army. It goes by the name of Staff Sergeant Patrick Dolan, Crew Chief of the Avenger Air Defense System, and an Army of One.
For more information, call Sergeant First Class Mural at 314-487-7771, paid for by the U.S. Army. GoArmy.com.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, where else, where else? Widescreen television, the best customer service in the state of Missouri. We're talking about Sears at the corner of Union and Natural Bridge. They have refrigerators, they have stoves, they have big screen, little screen, DVD players, tools. How about mowing a lawnmower? It's about that time of year, isn't it? Get on over to Sears. Jerome Williams, he will treat you like a king. He will treat you like a queen. You will know the name of the owner of Sears. How cool is that? Get on over to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge. And I'm Liz Brown. You tell him I told you to.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
The word on the street. He said, she said. The word on the street.
Girl,
all right now.
The word on the street. Getting ready to get to it. Word on the street. Irene J. Smith. What we got, what we got, what we got.
There's so much stuff going on. It's ridiculous. You know, word on the street is that
Wait a minute. Gotta set it up. Anna Axe. Talk to us about Anna Axe.
Well, you know, Anna was over the neighborhood stabilization.
Anna Ginsburg.
That's right. And she was moved. She went to the mayor's office. And, you know, there was a file open on her about an investigation. Remember, Benice's son overheard some alleged racist comments.
Alderwoman Benice Jones King.
Alderwoman Benice Jones King of the 21st Ward. We never heard what the result of that investigation was.
Racist comments, yes.
We never heard the results. So,
word is,
during the next budgetary year, she's going to be axed.
So all that water carrying gone to waste. How about this one? Can't get no love. Tell us about it. Can't get no love. Who that?
Darnetta
Klingstell Shamel?
Yeah, seems like she can't get an endorsement.
What you talking about?
Seems like she was in the 8th Ward. Even though Lil Conway was working behind the scenes trying to get an endorsement for her, she came up very short.
Very short. Peter Downs got 20. Darnetta Klingstell got 6. Can't get no love.
I'm telling you, and the only person she beat was a young man who's kind of new to this race type situation, running for the election board. She got 2 more votes than him. But how many anti-slave?
When you break it down, and this is a huge thing. This is a white ward, well considered a white ward. The 8th ward. We're talking the total of 43 votes against slaves raiders. Mm. 43 votes. Mm. People, everybody voted against, and only 17 votes when you add them up for slaves raiders.
Exactly.
All right. So let's go on to another word on the street. How about this one? Watch your back.
Ooh.
Watch your back.
My, they have backlog of warrants at city court. I mean, the warrants from November and December just got into the system in February. And they're working on the January warrants now. They placed a priority on getting in new tickets, is my understanding. They're behind. So what's going to happen with Mardi Gras?
There you go. How about this one? Fiddling while St. Louis burns. Fiddling while St. Louis burns. What's up with that?
Ooh, there are rumors afloat that there's going to be a move in the new budgetary year coming up to move functions from the fire marshal's office to the building divisions.
Now, they're the same people that screwed up the lead paint inspection. So now they're going to be in charge of handling fire stuff? Watch your back. Watch your back. Fiddling while St. Louis burns.
Blast from the past.
All right, let's talk about this. Let's go to he's a Republican after all.
That would be Jim Buford.
Jim Buford Slay.
Yes, who spoke in favor of the voucher system. What was it? The
The voucher bill.
Voucher bill.
The voucher
That's
bill.
That's right. Betty Thompson's bill.
A year ago.
Named after Betty Thompson, brother.
A year ago, Jim Buford was up, got in his car, drove up to Jefferson City to speak on behalf of a voucher bill that would cost the state of Missouri millions and millions of dollars and pay for private school with city money. And now he's running for the school board.
Exactly.
Ain't that some stuff? Well, after all, he is a Republican.
It's going to be interesting to see how many. I mean, in fact, you got a Democratic ward. I mean, that endorsed in the 8th ward. He got an endorsement.
These are amazing times. These are amazing times. And one more time, JoJo Danson, how about
you? Oh, Jerody, everybody's up in arms. Folks trying to take folks' property. You know, it's my understanding that folks were up in arms down at the neighborhood community development meeting down at the Board of Alderman, neighborhood development, rather, this past Tuesday. And last week at his meeting, people turned up to speak out against some bills that are proposing to take, I guess, about 40 people's homes.
All right, JoJo's dancing too. Irene J. Smith, thank you so much. I will see you next week. See you next week.
Woo, time short.
Yes, it is. Eye on the Moon. We'll be back. Stay with us.
And sharing in the city's splendor and glory.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Congress has had its say. Now the White House offers its take on what went wrong after Hurricane Katrina. A report is due out any time now. Here's ABC's Ann Compton.
6 months after the hurricanes, the White House says the problem was the information getting to crisis managers. Homeland Security Advisor Francis Townsend tells us this report should improve reactions the next time.
We can make it faster, we can make it more efficient, and that's the focus of the 125 recommendations, which are really broken down into 17 different issue areas.
Townsend says the critical problem was pre-landfall, evacuating New Orleans. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
The report also reaffirms a White House promise to stay with New Orleans and the rest of the Gulf Coast while the recovery effort continues. Well, today, thousands of New Orleanians will be left homeless again. They'll have to leave the cruise ships docked in the Mississippi where they've been staying while their homes were being repaired. A curfew in Baghdad has been extended in the midst of some of the worst violence Iraq has seen in months.
We're learning more details about what has happened throughout the last 24 to 36 hours. Close to 100 mosques, mostly Sunni mosques, have been raked by bullets and dozens of deaths. Bigger picture, many here are worried that this could actually be the tipping point that leads to civil war.
That's ABC's David Curley in Baghdad. Firefighters in Moscow are battling freezing conditions today as they comb through the rubble of what once was a busy marketplace. The roof came tumbling down. At least 38 people are confirmed dead. The number is expected to rise. The new bankruptcy laws aren't working as well as the government had hoped they would. A survey of bankruptcy attorneys nationwide says people who have legitimate reasons to file are being stymied. Well, the abuses continue at about the same rate before the new laws took effect. This is ABC News.
Want to get to the next level of your career? Earn a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix. It's education designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn your degree in 2 to 3 years. At over 170 campuses, they offer programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix at 1-800-853-4433. Offer not valid in Tennessee. Programs vary by campus. That's 1-800-853-4433.
Have you ever thought you'd like to buy and sell houses but didn't know how or where to get the money? Are you ready for a real home-based business that can get you out of the rat race and into financial freedom? Hi, this is Dolph DeRoos. I have engineered a proven system to real estate buying that will show you how to buy money-generating properties so you'll never have to work again. I'll send you a free tape that explains how easy it is. Call 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464.
Good news from the Labor Department. The number of people filing for unemployment benefits fell to 278,000, a bigger drop than expected. Still waiting to buy an iPod? Well, after you hear this, you may wonder if everyone else already has one.
And some people seem to think
It seems like only yesterday that Amy Greer of Lafayette, Indiana, downloaded the 500 millionth song on iTunes, Mississippi Girl by Faith Hill. 'Cause a Mississippi girl don't change her way. Well, it practically was. That was last July, which means in just 7 months, iTunes has sold as many songs as it did in its first 3 years. The folks at Apple haven't said yet what the billionth download is, but You're Beautiful by James Blunt is currently the most popular. You're beautiful. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
If you're over 40 and expecting, your chances of having twins are better than younger moms, even if you don't take fertility drugs. A Dutch study says it's because of a naturally occurring hormone that stimulates the ovaries. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, three suspects remain at large after a chase early yesterday that ended in gunfire. The suspects began fleeing from St. Louis police officers around 3 o'clock yesterday morning, eventually crashing on Bercher near I-70. Police say at least two of the three men fired shots at an officer during a short foot chase. The officer returned fire and may have injured one suspect. Authorities believed at first that the suspects were involved in an earlier shooting on Sublette that left a victim critically wounded, but police now say the two incidents were not related. A mechanical problem is believed to have caused a train derailment in Gasconade County. An Amtrak train carrying more than two dozen passengers derailed yesterday morning in Morrison, 75 miles west of St. Louis. Amtrak spokesperson Mark Magliari explains how the accident unfolded.
About 10:30, our eastbound train 311 en route to Kansas City from St. Louis encountered a problem. One set of wheels at one end of one car lost contact with the tracks.
There were no serious injuries reported. The passengers were taken by bus the rest of the way to Kansas City. Finally, this hour, 1 year after the arguments began in the controversial Supreme Court ruling allowing private property to be taken for economic development, eminent domain is still a hot topic in Missouri. Reforms are being pushed in the state legislature and could be on the ballot this November. Reform advocates worry that lobbyists could derail their efforts. The most strict reform proposals are in the form of citizen initiative petitions that could find their way onto the November ballot. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by AccountTemps, the world's first and largest specialized financial temporary staffing firm for accounting and financial professionals. Call or visit them today at AccountTemps.com. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Metro Toyota dealers. Westbound 70 at mile marker 128 in Columbia, that accident has been cleared. Eastbound 270 at Lilac, that accident has been cleared as well. Westbound 70 at Warrington, look for that accident reported involving an overturned vehicle. Westbound 70 at Walnut, there's an accident. Traffic's backed up through the Poplar Street Bridge. Northbound 270 from Manchester to Clayton, look for an incident to be cleared to the shoulder, but there is some delays. Eastbound 40 between Arsenal and Hampton, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 and 55 and 44, there's slow traffic there. Westbound 270 at 367 and West Florissant, look for slow traffic. Northbound Route 3 from, or northbound 55 from Union to Brewery, expect normal traffic. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 from 270 to Lindbergh, slow traffic there as well. And eastbound 40 from McKnight to Hanley, you've got heavy volume going on this hour. Westbound 5570 at Illinois 203 all the way into the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the 5570 split all the way into Laclede's Landing. Looks slow. Northbound Route 3 from Queenie onto the ramps to the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge. You've got slow traffic there as well. Westbound 64 at Bowell Avenue and 5570. Look for slow traffic as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. And this hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle through February. Purchase four tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive three complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly sunny, high in the mid-50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 30. Friday, partly cloudy with a high around 50. And Saturday, partly sunny skies, colder with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 35 degrees under clear skies. Lambert Field is reporting 35 degrees as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news your traffic and your weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the Wake Up Call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, come on, listen.
Welcome, 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 welcome. It is 8 o'clock on Thursday. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. My email address, revolution@lizbrown.com. That's revolution@lizbrown.com. Don't forget, this show is archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. So if you missed an hour, go get an hour. Like I said, this is Thursday's 8 o'clock. It's time for Justice for Reggie. Every Thursday, for an hour, I sit down with Jamala Rogers, and we talk about the case of Reginald Clemens. We talk about justice for Reggie. We talk about the Chain of Rocks case, and we talk about the death penalty. We have an innocent young man sitting on death row, and we're here to talk about, to tell you what you need to know about the death penalty. So let me welcome Jamala. Jamala, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So start us at the beginning.
Well, I feel like the story has been told in so many different ways, but it's always really an honor to tell it again, because there are folks who are listening for the first time or mm-hmm. who are hearing about it for the first time, despite our best efforts of getting the information out. So back in 1991, the Chain of Rocks Bridge, which was closed to traffic at that time, was a hangout for young people. And there were a number of young people who went to the bridge that night. Some of those young people included Julie and Robin Carey and their cousin Tom Cummins, who was visiting from out of town. It also included Reggie Clemens, Marlon Gray, Daniel Winfrey, and Antonio Richardson. They passed each other on the bridge, and before the night was over, Julie and Robin were overboard in the river. One body was never to be recovered, and the initial confession by Tom Cummins to the police department and with the lie detector test said that he was the person who in some way had something to do with the murders. Unfortunately, there was a flashlight found on the bridge, and to this day, Liz, I often wonder what would have happened, what would the outcome have been had that flashlight not been found on the bridge. But Antonio had left the flashlight, and that flashlight was traced to a friend whose father was in law enforcement, and thereby brought the four young men in. Three of those young men were black, and one was white.
And Tom Cummins and the young girls were white.
Mm-hmm. And we should be clear on that. And the two witnesses that Nails Moss used to make
Nails
his
Moss
case.
Is the prosecutor.
He's a prosecutor who prosecuted both cases of Reggie Clemens and Marlon Gray. The two folks that he used as credible witnesses were the two white guys. Mm-hmm. So you had Tom Cummins, who testified against the four, and then you had Daniel Winfrey, who testified against the three. So in the end, the three black guys.
And one of them is, one of the people that testified, Cummins, is a relative of the victim.
Is a relative of the victim.
Of the two victims.
That's correct.
So which makes it even more powerful and more compelling in the absence of a defense attorney that's making it clear the lack of credibility, the absence of credibility that Thomas Cummins has.
And so what we had was a prosecutor that was overzealous and actually used many tricks, every trick in the book inside the courtroom and outside of the courtroom to make his case.
And let's underscore that, Jamala, because some people might say, well, you know, prosecutors, it's okay if they use tricks. We're talking about lawlessness. The actions that this is one of the most cited prosecutors in the nation. This is a prosecutor that courts overturn cases based upon his lawlessness during the course of the trial.
Absolutely. And in the case of Reggie Clemens' trial, he was actually, cited with contempt of court. Mm-hmm. And so he, you know, he did everything that he could. And unfortunately, it did lead to convictions and the
death sentences
mm-hmm. for all three of the black guys. Mm-hmm. And so for Antonio Richardson, who actually would have been exempted for a couple of reasons. One is that he's mentally retarded, and so the law that was passed that exempted those folks from being executed, he would have been under that. But also, in Antonio Richardson's case, the jury could not come up with the penalty. And so it was the judge that ultimately imposed the death penalty, and ultimately that scenario was struck down by the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court said that if a jury can't make up their mind, then the person lives. A judge is not allowed
exactly.
to come in behind them and give somebody death.
That is
death.
Correct. So in either case, Antonio Richardson's life was spared. Unfortunately, Marlon Gray was executed last October, and right now we are fighting to save the life of Reggie Clemens.
And I want to say again that the Reggie Clemens case was almost the perfect, well, was the perfect storm of everything wrong that could go wrong in a death penalty case went wrong. We had prosecutorial misconduct. We had ineffective assistance of counsel. We had racism. We had police misconduct. We had police abuse on Reggie. All of that. clear, uncontrovertible examples of it.
Exactly. And one of the things that we agreed that we would do here, Liz, was that we would use the case to instruct people about all the pitfalls in the criminal justice system so that if anybody or any of their family were ever to have to go through, God forbid, the same kind of thing, even if it was a lesser kind of case, that they would be well versed on what to expect and how to navigate through that system, because it's not just an unfriendly system, it's a hostile system black folks and poor folks.
Absolutely. And it's also a hostile system. It's an adversarial system. The prosecutor, while they're supposed to be about finding the truth, while they're supposed to be about finding the law, they are there to convict. Far too many of them believe that the only job that they have is to convict. So it's an adversarial situation, and people need to know that going in, that you, when you use the word adversarial, that means you want to fight. And a lot of citizens don't understand how much of a fight you're in when you walk into any criminal courtroom.
Exactly. And so we really want to raise the issue of Reggie as an instructional piece, but also to really put pressure on a system that has unjustly and wrongfully executed. We're not just talking about incarceration now. We're talking about that have executed innocent people. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Missouri, we have the Larry Griffin, who was executed in 1995 wrongfully. And so and there's several others here in this state that have that we feel have been executed that were wrongfully convicted and executed. And so we really need to take a closer look at the system, and for those people who want to rid our community of crime, because that's part of the discussion that's intensifying now because of the quote police chases, then we really need to look at what creates crime. How do we support it in ways that not only help the police do criminal stuff, but also doesn't really get us the end result of our communities being safe and secure.
Despite all our tax dollars.
And so I just think that the other piece of it is that piece, but also we're really putting a strain on the system in terms of opening it up for scrutiny. And there's been a few things across the country that have indicated that there's some movement in that direction, the latest one being what's happening in California.
And we're going to get to that in just a second, but I do want, could you please let people know the status of Reggie? Where is he in the process right now?
Right now, Reggie is in the clemency phase, and that is the phase which says that all of your legal claims have been exhausted. And he's been through several appeals phases. And so we are at the phase now, which is not to say that at some point, we keep digging, we keep, looking to see what other kinds of legal motions that can be filed. But right now, the clemency phase means that they have been exhausted and the only intervention can come from the governor. And so that's why we have put such an emphasis on the petitions to Matt Blunt to say, here's a case that you need to look at. You've already executed one person. Let's not make the same mistake twice. And so he's in fairly good spirits despite, all that's happening to him and all that has happened to him. His family is strong, very involved in this whole struggle for the last 16 years. So, we need to be behind not just Reggie, but to really look at the system for what it is. And one is, A, that executions are not deterring crime. B, that, in the case of racism and classism, that there are going to be some people that are caught up into the net that don't need to be there. And three, that we need to put ourselves in the position of, what if this was me or one of my loved ones? What kind of response do I have from the community? And so we really are trying to build a movement around this whole moratorium piece so that we can put the death penalty behind us once and for all.
And one of the issues that concerns the death penalty when people are trying to figure out where they stand on this, how they feel about it, they talk about how, well, I know that if one of my relatives were murdered, I'd want that person murdered too, and the prosecutors use that, and organizations that support the death penalty say that there's closure. If somebody is killed, the family finally gets closure. Well, we really need to talk to somebody in a position to make a comment like that. We have joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, Tom Lowenstein. He's a member of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
And I'm here with Jamala Rogers.
Hey, Jamala. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good.
Tom, you are intimately involved with the issue of having a family member murdered. Talk to us about that.
When I was a little, when I was 10 years old, my father was murdered in his office in New York. So I guess, right, I mean, that makes me intimately involved. And I know what that feels like to go through that. And I understand very much the desire people have for revenge and the feeling that the only justice that you can possibly come close to is to have the killer executed. I know that feeling. And I understand, and I think it's important to acknowledge that and to acknowledge that victims' families, you know, that's how a lot of us feel in the wake of a murder. It feels like it's going to, bring you some kind of closure. And the really horrible, lonely part of it all is, you know, you get to a point in your life where you realize that it doesn't really matter what happens to the killer. There's no such thing as closure if you've lost a family member. And I think that when you look at the death penalty and you look at what it does to the states that have it and you look at the injustices and you look at innocent people getting executed and you start to add all that stuff up on the, you know, you have to really ask yourself whether, killing somebody, no matter how justified you feel in killing them, is really worth all the harm that you're doing to yourself and the society and going after them in that way.
Well, what happened to the person that murdered your father?
He actually was found not guilty by reason of insanity, and he's out now. so he lives, I guess, in the last I heard, upstate New York. I'm not really sure. We don't keep in touch.
Mm-hmm.
Was
the death penalty ever a possibility for him?
No, the death penalty wasn't a possibility. New York didn't have it at the time. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was interesting was that at the time that my father was murdered, first-degree murder in New York only existed if you killed a cop. So by definition, my father's killer was only ever, you know, the worst crime he could have been charged with at the time was second-degree murder. And right away, as a little boy, I understand how important it is to protect police or to feel that you're protecting police and to give police every tool that they need to, to keep justice in our society. But at the same time, as a little boy, when you sit there and the state of New York says to you, your father could only ever be second degree murder because his life apparently wasn't as valuable as someone else's life. So even though the death penalty wasn't on the table at that time, you know, you have that one of the aspects of the death penalty that always comes up is who gets executed and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And pro-death penalty advocates will tell you it's the worst of the worst. You know, the death penalty exists so that we get the worst of the worst. And sure, every once in a while, you will execute someone like John Wayne Gacy, who, you know, killed 33 little boys and buried them in his backyard. And I don't know anyone that would argue that that's not the worst of the worst. But far and away, the death penalty cases in this country, as you guys have been saying, are made up of poor people. They're made up of people of color. They're made up of people who can't get lawyers. What is the worst of the worst in murder? If you've lost your family member to homicide, that's the worst of the worst. You know, I can't think of anything worse than what happened to my father.
And what kind of place do we live in that the size of your pocketbook or the pigment in your skin determines whether or not your country is going to kill you?
Right, and where you're from.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're from Harris County, Texas, and you're a black man that killed a white person, your chances of getting the death penalty are outrageously high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're from a northern state that has the death penalty and you're a white person that killed a black person, you're not going to get the death penalty. I think, if I get the number right, since 1977, since the death penalty came back into effect in this country, there have been 12 white people executed for killing black people. And the number of black people executed for killing white people is, I can't even remember what it is now, 80, 90, 100, something like that. So again, you just look at those numbers and, you know, even if you're a person who believes that we've made a lot of progress in our society on issues of race in the last 30 or 40 years, and I think in some ways we have made a lot of progress, when you look at the death penalty and you look at the race involved and you look at the money involved, it's just not possible to sit down and say that we have a fair system.
And they say that the most segregated place in the United States is our churches on Sunday. I disagree. I believe death row is the most segregated place in America.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. And You know, again, so for me, that gets back to the issue of if you take a horrible crime and you take a horrible murder and you take the outrage that we all feel. I mean, you look at someone. I mean, let's just say for a second we have someone that we know is guilty, which, as you know, you guys have been talking about Larry Griffin. I personally, sitting here in Massachusetts, it's amazing to me that Missouri is going to go forward with an execution in the wake of the Larry Griffin case. I mean, how on earth do you, when you have a guy that was executed 10 years ago, and even the prosecutor has come out and said we need to reopen this, I mean, that ought to stop the system while Missouri looks into what went wrong. And then you have a similar, I mean, in the Larry Griffin case, it was a snitch, a jailhouse snitch. And it sounds like in the Clemens case, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But it ends up being the same type of situation where, you know, a bunch of people are on a bridge. The ones that get to the police first get some kind of deal. And a guy like Reggie Clemens ends up facing the death penalty. I mean, you have this testimony of people that have a vested interest in getting out of the thing from one way or the other. That's what took Larry Griffin's life. And it just would seem to me on the face of it that anyone, if you're for the death penalty, people who are for the death penalty ought to be most concerned about this stuff. Because if you really believe that the death penalty is a moral statement against killing and is really an important moral statement, then you should be the most concerned about making sure that it's fair and that no one gets executed where there's even a question that they might be innocent.
What do the members of murder victims' families for human rights, what do they look like? Who are they?
Well, it's an organization made up of people who have lost family members to homicide and of people who have had family members executed. So we have a wide cross section of people from around the country. I'm not, you know, the membership isn't huge. Mm-hmm. It's a club that, as you know, no one wants to be a member of.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. I mean, one of the people that I work with most is a guy named Bud Welch, whose daughter Julie Marie died in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yes, I've had him on the show. And,
yeah.
And Tom, I need you to hold that thought, please, because
sure.
We have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm talking to Tom Lowenstein. He is a member of Murders Victims Families for Human Rights. He's joining us from Boston, and this is Justice for Reggie Thursday. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We're talking about the death penalty. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with us.
What's real and going on below, but now you never show it to me, do you? And remember when I moved in you, the holy dark was moving too.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour, 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Mortimer. We're looking at the Sowers traffic and weather. Sowers traffic is sponsored by TeedUpSt.Louis.org. Northbound Illinois Route 3 at 8th Street and Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic to report. Westbound 64 at the 5570 split. Look slow. Southbound 94 at Mid Rivers Mall. Look for an accident to report there. Westbound 5570 from 64 on the Poplar Street Bridge. You have slow traffic to report as well. Westbound 70 at Walnut. Look for an accident been cleared. The traffic will thin out this hour. Northbound 270 at Manchester and Clayton. Look for all roadways to be reopened after an earlier stall. Eastbound 40 from Chesterfield Parkway all the way in Timberlake Manor. Look for an accident to be cleared. Look for slow traffic going on in that area. Northbound 270 at 55 and 44. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 between 367 and West Florissant, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic as well. And 40 between 270 and Hanley, you've got slow traffic, as well as McCausland and Hanley, you have slow traffic as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Baby is cold inside. Help the area elderly and disabled. Beat the winter cold snap with a donation to HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Please donate today at HeatUpSt.Louis.org. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny today, high in the mid-50s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 30. For Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. And on Saturday, colder, partly sunny with a high in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 35 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 35 under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the Wake Up Call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, is your station for talk radio with a difference. Call now for your turn on the air. The numbers are 314-454-0400 or toll-free 1-877-920-WGNU. Individual results may vary. Some restrictions apply.
No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's go take on the day.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6. Try your best.
Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here on a Justice for Reggie Thursday with Jamala Rogers. And our guest this morning joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, is Tom Lowenstein. He's a member of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. And, Tom, you were letting us in on what your organization looks like. Where do the members come from?
Right. Well, the members, come from across the country, and as I said, they're family members of murder victims and family members of people who have been executed. I've just been thinking over the break of one of the extraordinary moments in my life was shortly before she died. I got to meet and spend a little bit of time with Mamie Till Mobley. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman everybody knows the Emmett Till story, or certainly everybody should. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman who's the killers of her son came out and gave a magazine interview telling what they did.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question those men were guilty. They admitted it, and they got paid to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she found it, she looked at the death penalty system and looked at what it was in this country and didn't want that to happen to those people because, again, it makes us all worse off to have the death penalty. Killing people in the name of victims harms the states that do it, and it harms, obviously, the innocent people that end up on death row and that end up going through the system and that don't have a fair shake. So that's Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. I'm also have gotten close with a guy named Bill Babbitt, whose brother Manny Babbitt was executed in California in 1999. And Manny was a Vietnam vet who had post-traumatic stress disorder, was executed for killing an old woman. He broke into her house and he beat her, and she later died of a heart attack, and they executed him for that. And so talking to Bill Babbitt Manny was actually turned his brother in.
Mm.
When he found out that he thought his brother could have been involved in the crime, he called the police and turned him in to try to get him help, and they executed him. And again, I think that the important thing here is we can all, let's just say that some people do things that are so bad that as far as we can tell on earth, they deserve to die. I don't even know if I figured that out yet for myself, but even if that's true, you have to take a step beyond that and look at the system and look at who gets executed and look at the damage that it does to the states that have it.
Don't we
necessary. Go ahead.
Don't we also have to look at the fallibility of man? We are designed to make mistakes. We can't. I mean, and this is the ultimate decision. We always get it wrong. So we can't. You can't do something as final as the death penalty when we are as fallible as we are.
That's right. And if you look across, I mean, it's the number now, I think, of people that have been exonerated from death row since 1977, I think is up over 120.
And there are states out there that are trying to keep us from the records of the people to prove that there are so many more people than that, that should have been exonerated and that were killed.
Right, sure. And the pro-death penalty people, it's interesting. When I started doing any death penalty work 10 years ago, even 10 years ago, the pro-death penalty people, I mean, in Massachusetts, we actually reinstated, we don't have it here, but we reinstated the death penalty in 1997, and it ended up being overturned by one vote in the legislature. And at that time, the pro-death penalty people were arguing, you know, violently that there was never any innocent people on death row, that it couldn't possibly have happened. Well, now they can't say that anymore. So now they say, well, there's no solid proof that an innocent person has ever been executed. And, you know, proving someone's innocence after they're dead is almost impossible. So it's an interesting argument for them to make because it's not really refutable. And yet here comes a case in Missouri with Larry Griffin where it turns out it is refutable.
Yes.
And they are finally going to prove that there was an innocent person who was executed in this country. So that's part of the price that, you know, for people out there who feel like the worst of the worst just need to be executed, you have to ask yourself, if you want to execute John Wayne Gacy, you know, are you willing to put Larry Griffin next to him and kill them both? Because you're going to kill innocent people if you have the death penalty. As you said, human beings are fallible. And again, is it fair in this country? I always say this, especially up here. People really want to argue that race doesn't matter anymore and that, you know, that poverty does, that people get good lawyers in this country. And a lot of people do get good lawyers. And, you know, public defenders, by and large, people who get, even public defenders don't get executed in this country. But it's just not possible to look at the death penalty system, at the criminal justice system in this country, and argue that race doesn't play a part in it anymore, that money doesn't play a part in it anymore. Rich people don't get executed.
And also the other piece of it, Tom, is that people getting lawyers, that doesn't play a part in it as well, because there are states where what you get is whoever they hand you.
Sure.
People and courts have held that people that were drunk during death penalty cases, totally incompetent, people that were disbarred after they finished the trial.
Sure.
People are on death row as a result of their actions.
Right. And I guess I just want to go back to the point that if you take it at face value that every single prosecutor in this country is upstanding and honest and does their best job, and every defense lawyer is upstanding, honest, competent, and does their best job. I mean, again, I don't believe that's true.
Let's
just say for sake of argument for people that it is. They make mistakes. And when you think of the pressure on a prosecutor, I mean, I've been working on a case on a guy in death row in Pennsylvania who's on death row for killing a 4.5-year-old girl. And he had a lawyer, a decent lawyer, who tried his best. The guy had no resources compared to the prosecution, you know, and mistakes were made in that case. So my point is that even if you say everybody's honest and fair and doing their best job and that there's never any corruption, the pressure on prosecutors to clear cases, especially in high-profile murder cases, is unbelievable. And when they have someone in their sights who they think did it, they often cut corners. Police get confessions that are disputed later. I mean, this happens all the time, and it's been proven, obviously, that people can give confessions to things they didn't do. So again, even assuming that everybody's well-intentioned and does their best job and not incompetent, which is not possible, but just assume it's true for a second, people make mistakes and innocent people end up on death row. And that is a price that we pay in order to do this thing, which Bud Welch always says that they tell you you're going to get some kind of feel good out of the execution of the killer of your family member. You know, once the person who killed your family member is executed, you're going to get a feel good. Well, you know, maybe for a few minutes, but the person that you love is dead, and they're always going to be dead. And I know someone whose family member is executed who told me later that actually they felt worse after the person was executed because they still had all this anger, but they had no one to direct it at anymore. They had nothing left to do with it. So I think there's a real question as to whether executions actually help family members. I know that prosecutors will tell you it's for the family member until the family member tells them they don't want execution, at which point they say it doesn't matter what the family member wants. It's all about justice. So, I mean, this is a moving thing a shifting target. And I think that the argument that the death penalty really helps family members of murder victims, I think, is just not true.
And Tom, you talked about the prosecutors doing everything that they can to get a conviction. And a lot of people don't know that when you look at who's on death row, they are so vulnerable. You have mentally retarded. You have mentally ill. I mean, you have people there who don't even know why they're there.
Right.
And so it's very easy for a prosecutor to go after them and say, okay, look, we've killed somebody in the name of justice. But I really think it's pathetic that you would choose the most vulnerable of society. Many times folks who have reached out for help and were refused help,
right.
Whether they be schizophrenic or whatever.
Right.
And now because they didn't get the help that they needed, now they're going to be executed.
And also, I mean, and not only do we have that, but we have that understanding that it's okay to execute people like that coming from the highest level. Bill Clinton, in the midst of his quest to be president of the United States, took a moment out to go back home to Arkansas to be there in order to witness the execution of a man that was so retarded that when they took him to death row, he left a piece of cake in his cell. And they asked him why. He said, because I'm going to come back and get it after we finish here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so when you have people at that level co-signing on this, saying that this is okay, it makes it even more challenging and difficult for us to get to this. Because that's one of the most fiendish, awful things that I've ever heard.
Well, I think that raises two very, very important points. First of all, how political the death penalty is. And again, I think that goes to public pressure. You know, when you have a horrible murder that's outraged the community, and you need a prosecutor to step up and say, look, I'm not going to seek the death penalty. I mean, that takes a lot of political courage that people often don't have. And that, I think, was the situation Bill Clinton was in. He felt he had to do that for political reasons. And that's the notion that you would execute someone for a political reason.
A retarded person.
I think the other point is, again, which for me is the reason that I'm part of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights, and the reason that I speak out on this issue is, what does it do to us? As you were saying, these are the most vulnerable people in society, some of them, and some of them end up there, you know, without a lawyer. What are we doing to ourselves when we put these people in a cage for 15 years and then drag them out and as we're now seeing in California, execute them in a horribly painful and cruel way? And just say for the sake of argument that they deserve it. That's not the point to me. People always talk to me about my father's killer. And, you know, for years I went through, what was his state of mind? What was his... I don't care. You know, I don't care. I don't want to spend all my time... Let's just take the case of a guilty murderer. Again, putting aside innocent people, which is a huge issue. But just take the most guilty person that we've ever seen on death row. What did it do to us to kill him? What corners are we willing to cut? What unfairness are we willing to put up with in our society? All so that we can say, none of that matters because at the end of the day, we killed the guy who deserved it. I wanted to kill the guy that killed my father for years. And what I finally realized was that if I chose to do that, I was hurting myself. It wasn't about what he deserved. I still think he deserves anything you want to do to him. I don't care what happens to him, but I care about what happens to me. And I think the death penalty is a perfect example of how far people are willing to go sometimes to hurt themselves in order to get something that they think in the end is justice. But there is no justice when your family member has been killed. They're gone, and they're never coming back. You can't switch the place. You can't get kill the killer and bring the family member back. And in New York, where they didn't have the death penalty when my father was killed, they reinstated it about 10 years ago, and there's varying studies on how much it's cost, but I think the lowest one I've seen is literally they've spent $200 million on the death penalty in New York in the last 10 years. They've got five guys on death row, and they've never executed any of them. And again, in our society today, when money is so short and the economy is so bad, that's a moral issue. Take the $200 million and put it into victims' assistance. You know, I was lucky enough when my father was killed that I had a strong family in place and came from a well-to-do family in Boston. I got all the help I needed. When I was furious, when I was enraged, you know, I had three therapists coming to check on me every minute. And the people that end up on death row, is the point that you were making, they don't have that kind of support. They don't have that kind of background. And you take the money. When someone's father is murdered, it usually means the end of the family. It means economic hardship. You know, take the money that we're using to execute people and put it into helping people that need help. That's what prevents murder. That's what stops this from happening. And that's what we should be focusing on, making ourselves better. If we have a more just, more fair, more equal society, that makes us better. And people are always going to do horrible things, you know, but you can't affect that by spending millions of dollars executing innocent people in this rush to feel some kind of justice that doesn't exist.
And one more quick point, Tom, before we have to let you go here.
Yeah.
The five people on death row in New York City is also significant because it's my understanding that in New York, when they did reinstate the death penalty, they fully funded it. That's why it cost so much. Fully funded it for the prosecutors and fully funded it for the defense attorneys.
Right.
And when you have people people of equal weight going after each other in a death penalty case, you don't get a whole lot of convictions.
That's right. And people say, well, then, you know, we can. It's more expensive to execute people than it is to put them in jail for life. That's a fact in this country today. And people say, well, we can save money by cutting appeals. Sure, cut all the appeals you want. Don't fund the death, you know, the defense lawyers. Then you're going to execute more innocent people.
There you go.
It's that simple. You get to do it one way or the other way. And as you pointed out, if you do it the right way in this country and fully fund the defense, you don't end up executing any.
No, you don't end up with a whole lot of people on death row.
That's right. That's right.
Tom Lowenstein, member of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. Where can people find out more about your organization?
If they go to, it's actually mvfhr.org on the web.
Very good. Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We'll get to some of your calls when we get back, and we'll also get to some more updates, what's going on, what you need to know about Reggie's case. Stay with us.
Sting like a hornet. They won't let me have it. Not even here. No one else want it. And if I try to take it, they wanna bring me down and strip me naked.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on a wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck. Update is brought to you this hour by
Alliance Financial Group. How do the rich get rich? Let Alliance Financial Group show you how. Call 381-8967.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Boston. Another curious thread has surfaced regarding the events of 9/11. A private security company called ICTS provided security services to every airport that the hijacked planes departed from on September 11th. What makes this rather curious is that ICTS is an Israeli-owned company. This same company was also employed that same year at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris to screen passengers who were boarding flights to America. In late December of 2001, shoe bomber Richard Reed boarded a flight from Paris to Miami and tried to detonate explosives he had hidden in his shoe. He was prevented from doing so after passengers subdued him, and the flight was diverted to Logan Airport in Boston, where he was arrested. U.S. intelligence officials said that their Israeli counterparts knew for several months that Reed was involved in terrorist activities, and they even had an agent sit next to him on an Israeli flight from Amsterdam to Tel Aviv in July of 2001. That was to try and find out who he was meeting with. Fox News Channel had even aired a report in December of 2001 that said Israel had prior knowledge of September 11th type attacks. An instant messaging company based in New York City called Odigo says its office in Israel had received text messages just hours before the September 11th hijackings took place, warning that an attack in the United States was about to happen. Those warnings were turned over to Israeli authorities, but they were never forwarded to American officials in time to do any good. This is your wake-up call Global News Update, brought to you this hour by Alliance Financial Group.
Would you like to earn $500 to $2,500 a month? Have you been turned down for a real estate loan because of bad or poor credit? Would you like to invest in real estate but you don't know how to get started? All you need is the right strategy. Let Alliance Financial Group show you how with the free financial presentation today at 7 p.m. at the Airport Hilton Hotel. Seating is limited, so call 381-8967, 381-8967.
No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? That's right, that's right. Refrigerator stoves, television sets, DVD players, CD players, treadmills, tools. We're talking about, it's March. You know, it's almost March. It's time to start thinking about mowing your lawn. Get a new lawnmower at Sears right there in your own neighborhood. He will treat you. He's the owner of the Sears at Union and Natural Bridge, Jerome Williams. He will treat you like a king. He will treat you like a queen. Great customer service, and it's right here in your neighborhood. You don't have to take out a bank loan to go to the mall. It's right here, full service, everything you need at Sears. I'm Liz Brown. When you get to Sears, tell Jerome Williams I told you to.
The recent hailstorm may have caused damage to your roof, but beware. When these types of events happen, people called storm chasers appear out of the blue and offer to do the work, but then disappear with your money and only half do the job. Phil Person of Phil Person Roofing reminds you he will be here to serve you long after the storm chasers have come and gone. Person Roofing is a licensed and certified contractor specializing in roof replacements and repairs, and replaces from 200 to 400 roofs a year. Phil Person Roofing, in business 16 years, 361-7127.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics, to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Tired of talking to the wall, the TV, the puppy?
Here, Fido.
314-454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU. Give us a call. We'll listen.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Justice for Reggie. And I'm here with, of course, Jamala Rogers. Jamal, we have 5 minutes here. Bring us up to date.
Okay, we got some things going on this weekend that we've been talking about for a while, but it's coming to fruition. We're going to kick off the State of the Black Community tonight with cousin Jeff Johnson from Black Entertainment Television. He's a producer and host of Cousin Jeff Chronicle, and used to be the former president of the Hip Hop Summit Action Network. So he'll be in to speak, and then all day tomorrow at the University of Missouri, we will have the State of the Black Community, and we have a number of panels, policing the police, the criminal justice system, the death penalty, and we've convened a number of legal community and academic people to talk about that issue. And then, of course, on Friday night, we have the end of the Freedom Writers Project, for at least for the Reggie Clemens phase of it. And we're going to have the finals for the MC battle, which will be at the Science, and that is Blueberry Hill. And we will be opening up with Thunder, who won the final for the Poetry Slam. Oh. And that sister was jamming. She won with a piece called Chain of Rocks Blues.
Okay.
So
okay.
She won with that. So she'll open up tonight, and then we will see who is going to win the MC battle and win the $500 cash prize. So it's been fun being a part of that, and that is an outreach to the hip-hop community. And then if people go to the website, we got a few petition detail scheduled. We tried to do that Fox thing with Mug Deer, but the cold kept us from really being out there with the petitions, and we just did distribution of the leaflet. But, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, Liz, but the whole thing around what's going on in California with the legal injection piece of it, that is going to impact on all death penalty cases. And, in fact, Michael Taylor's case right here in Missouri has been appealed, and motions will be coming, oral arguments come up on April 18th for that.
And so, the question really is how can a doctor participate in any death?
Exactly. And I really was glad they were standing tall, because there's some doctors who have capitulated in other arenas, whether it be the choice arena, you know, perform abortions or whatever. But, you know, in California, they stood tall and said, we're not going to be a part of this. So therefore, they couldn't execute. So
And they brought the whole system to a head. And I'm looking at an article right now that says controversy may end all California executions.
Yeah. Think about it. Who would have thought that? You know,
that's how God works, huh?
Right, right. And then people had a lot of response to American Justice, where they featured Reggie's case. And this is an old version of the case, but for it to come now, you know, people thought it was very interesting, and so we wanted to kind of get some feedback from people around that in terms of what their perception was, particularly if you already had the information from us and the fact sheet, how you saw that.
And I just want to tell people that obviously we are having an impact, like a huge impact for that show to be resurrected at this point in time is, it's not coincidental.
It's not coincidental, but I think the thing that came clear is that Tom Cummings' story was cast in doubt, but with all that doubt, people still moved right on past him to the black men.
There you go.
So there we have American Justice.
Very good. And Jamala, once again, where can people call to sign up on the petitions and be part of this?
They can call us at 367-5959. But on Monday at 7 o'clock, we do have our regular campaign meeting. So come, get your petition, come get updates. Come to the Rowan Community Center at 1401 Rowan. The website is www.justiceforreggie.com.
Excellent. Jamala Rogers, thank you so much. Another edition of Justice for Reggie. I'll see you next week.
That's correct.
All right, folks. I'll be back in the next hour. Stay with us.
Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I will never say that progress has been made. You take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, feel the brother.
It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger.
You will learn from the lessons of the past to better protect the American people.
President Bush talking to reporters this morning just after the release of a White House report on what went wrong after Hurricane Katrina. It places blame mainly on FEMA, and it makes over 100 recommendations about how to better handle the next natural disaster. However, this report may be too little and too late for people across the Gulf Coast, especially in New Orleans.
State and local leaders have been saying it is safe for everyone to return to New Orleans as long as they have a place to stay. But a new study using data from the Environmental Protection Agency suggests it may not be safe for young children. That toxic sludge we all heard about and saw following the storm apparently left behind arsenic, lead, and petrochemical at potentially dangerous levels. Environmental experts say it's still on the ground here and in buildings that were flooded.
ABC's Alex Stone in New Orleans. The Senate Armed Services Committee has a lot of questions about a White House deal which would transfer control of 6 U.S. ports to an Arab-owned company. And today, members plan to ask them.
Strengthening its case on port security, the White House has released fact sheets to document the extra safeguards demanded of the Arab company set to take over port operations next week. In fact, the Arab company has apparently agreed to some classified security aspects that were not required of the current British company.
ABC's Ann Compton in Washington. In Iraq, religious and political leaders are doing all they can to keep that nation from sliding into civil war.
Some disturbing reports this morning. Nearly 90 people may have been killed execution style. Tensions remain very high here. Lots of reprisals after the Golden Dome was blown up.
Golden Dome on a holy Shiite shrine, ABC's David Curley in Baghdad. Rescue workers in Moscow are dealing with freezing conditions as they search for survivors in the rubble of a busy marketplace. The roof gave way from too much snow. At least 40 people are dead. This is ABC News.
Want to get to the next level of your career? Earn a bachelor's or a master's degree at University of Phoenix. It's education designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn your degree in 2 to 3 years. At over 170 campuses, they offer programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix at 1-800-853-4433. Offer not valid in Tennessee. Programs vary by campus. That's 1-800-853-4433.
Have you ever thought you'd like to buy and sell houses but didn't know how or where to get the money? Are you ready for a real home-based business that can get you out of the rat race and into financial freedom? Hi, this is Golf DeRoos. I have engineered a proven system to real estate buying that will show you how to buy money-generating properties so you'll never have to work again. I'll send you a free tape that explains how easy it is. Call 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464. 1-800-300-0464.
So how will the U.S. be remembered after the 2006 Olympics? Chances are it won't be for the performances, most of them at least. Here's ABC's Aaron Katursky.
Team USA has won more medals than it ever has at an Olympics outside the United States, but the American athletes here may be remembered more for their attitude than their performance. Speed skaters Shawnee Davis and Chad Hedrick bickered. Bodie Miller expressed relief his medalless skiing meant he wouldn't have to travel 60 miles from the slopes to Torino for the ceremony. Hockey player Mike Modano complained about having to arrange his own travel after the team was eliminated from competition. You'd think, Modano said, USA Hockey would be more of a well-oiled operation. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, Torino.
Then again, we can hope that Sasha Cohen will make the Stars and Stripes proud. The figure skater is going into tonight's free skate in first place by the slimmest of margins, and she's going to be well-rested. We're told that Cohen skipped both practice sessions after the short program. I'm Darielle Alvinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Ryan-Meyer with your WGNU News Update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, formal adult charges are pending against a 13-year-old boy in a Central West End rape. The teen was arrested in December on suspicion of raping a woman in the 4000 block of Westminster. He had been charged under the juvenile code with forcible rape, forcible sodomy, first-degree robbery, and first-degree burglary. A judge certified the boy to stand trial as an adult yesterday. Two Canadian citizens face federal drug charges in St. Louis. The FBI yesterday announced the arrest of 30-year-old Jonathan Sekema and 27-year-old Suzanne Pink. Both are charged with conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute ecstasy. Sekema and Pink were arrested Tuesday as they traveled through St. Louis. Police say they seized cash and drugs at the time of the arrest. Finally this hour, Illinois' annual Governor's Conference on Tourism kicks off today. More than 90 million tourists visited Illinois in 2004, with many of them visiting the state's newest attraction, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library.
It's had a record number of visitors, about 500,000, I think twice than what we had expected. It's an interactive museum, very high-tech, that really shows and walks you through Lincoln's life.
That's State Travel Director Jan Costner. The Governor's Conference looks at ways to expand tourism in the state. Currently, nearly 1 in 10 jobs in Illinois are tourism-related. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Accountemps, the world's first and largest specialized financial temporary staffing firm for accounting and financial professionals. Call or visit them today at accountemps.com. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Goodwill. Northbound 270 is slow on either side of 44. Westbound 270 at Chain of Rocks Bridge and New Florissant Road. Look for no problems to report. Northbound 55 from Union all the way into the brewery looks good. Eastbound 40 from McKnight to Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Westbound 40 from McCausland to Hanley, you've got slow traffic. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and 270, that traffic is easing. The I-70 reversible lanes are closed until midday for maintenance operations. Westbound 5570 from Tudor to the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the 5570 split all the way into Laclede's Landing looks good. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Goodwill. Don't miss Goodwill's huge winter clearance sale going on now through Sunday. Find great bargains with 50% off merchandise at all 33 area Goodwill stores. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, look forward to mostly sunny skies, high in the mid-50s this evening. Mostly clear with a low around 30. Friday, partly cloudy, high in the upper 50s. Friday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the mid-30s. Then on Saturday, partly sunny, colder, with a high only in the lower 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 38 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 38, both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So good luck. Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
To all in this nation who dare listen to us. black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. Don't forget, the Wake Up Call, my shows are archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. Do not forget, I'm also podcast there, and we are streamed at WGNU.net, so you can get to us every kind of way, and I've given you my digits, so handle your business. I often sit in this chair here as a woman of African descent, as a talk show host, as a writer, as an attorney. I sit in this chair and I talk to you every day, 4 hours every day. And from the perspective of who I am, what I've learned, the training that I've had, I look at the amazing place that this country is and the amazing times that we find ourselves in. We live at a time where, as the kids say, out your mouth. The highest levels of government, out their mouths. Lobbied members of the United States Senate in order to get members of the United States Senate to just say yes to torture. To torture! To torture! The guy that sits in the president's seat in the White House was insisting upon the ability to be able to torture human beings. This is mind-numbing. And what is even crazier, as if that's not textbook crazy enough, there are American citizens out there that deny that this country would ever engage in any kind of torture. They throw up their hands and they say, huh? Not here. Other countries, other societies say, when they deal with a legacy of torture, they say never again. Apparently, from the mindsets of Americans, our mantra is, never before. We've never done this before. Huh. I'm a woman of African descent. I know what this country is capable of. And we need to put some specifics to that. We have joining us this morning from Madison, Wisconsin, one of my favorite cities, Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin, Alfred McCoy. And he has written a book, A Question of Torture. Alfred McCoy, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
Fine.
Very good. Did torture just start with, let's say, John McCain when he... Did torture just start recently in the United States?
No, what you're seeing right now is the legacy of 50 years of torture research and propagation by the CIA. Let's start with the photographs, because a whole bunch more of them were just released last week by Australian television, by Salon.com.
Abu Ghraib.
Yep, the photographs from Abu Ghraib of the people with the bags on their heads, their arms extended, all that. Let's start with the most famous, the most iconic of all those photos, that one of the Iraqi standing on a box, hooded, arms extended, with fake electrical wires hanging from his arms. Now, when that photo came out in 2004, William Safire, writing in the New York Times, said creeps. Other people said hillbillies from Cumberland, Maryland. I looked at that photo, and I saw systematic torture. The Iraqi was hooded for sensory disorientation, and his arms were extended for self-inflicted pain. Those are the two signature, the two trademark torture techniques developed by the CIA during the 1950s. From 1950 to 1962, the CIA led a massive mind control project, a kind of Manhattan Project of the mind, spending up to $1 billion a year to crack the code of human consciousness. And then what they came up with was this new form of torture, psychological torture, the first real revolution in this cruel science of pain in centuries.
And who did they start with? What type of people did they start with?
Well, There were two strands to the research. One was the sort of secret in-house research. A lot of people have heard about the drug experiments, experimenting with marijuana, hashish, mescaline, and above all, LSD. CIA ran a whole bunch of in-house LSD experiments and even got outrageous. At one point, they had party houses in San Francisco and New York, and they had San Francisco prostitutes going out, picking up customers, lacing their drinks with LSD, and then photographing the reaction on the Johns. All that exotic drug research led nowhere except to lawsuits. Didn't work at all. Didn't produce any useful information, any useful techniques. What did work was that they outsourced the boring, mundane behavioral science research to the leading universities and the most brilliant behavioral scientists of their generation, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, McGill. And the first big breakthrough, the first real discovery, came in the early 1950s at McGill University in Montreal. And there, a very famous psychologist named Dr. Hebb found that he could induce a state akin to acute psychosis in just 48 hours. Now, what did he do? Electroshock, hypnosis, LSD? No, none of the above. All he did was have student volunteers, well-paid, sitting in an air-conditioned cubicle with goggles, gloves, and earmuffs. First they hallucinated, then they suffered breakdown. If you look at the photographs of those student volunteers from the early 1950s, they look just like the detainees at Guantanamo. Look at those photographs carefully from Guantanamo. The people got gloves on, they've got earmuffs, and they got blackened goggles. That's it. That's sensory disorientation. It will induce a complete breakdown in 48 hours. The next thing they did, CIA had two top neurologists at the Cornell University Medical Center in New York City study the Soviet KGB torture techniques. And these two eminent neurologists concluded that the most brutal techniques used by the KGB did not involve beating, but instead just involved ordering a victim to stand immobile, arms outstretched, for days at a time, while fluids flowed to the leg. Sores formed. Those sores suppurated. The kidneys shut down. Hallucinations started. Incredibly painful. And the CIA then took these two basic techniques, sensory disorientation and self-inflicted pain, and they codified them into a so-called curiously named QBARC counterintelligence interrogation manual. And they released that internally in the intelligence community in 1963, and they spent the next 30 years, right up to the early 1990s, propagating these torture techniques worldwide to allied armies and police forces across Latin America and across Asia. And if people want to get the manual, and you can do it, just go to your computer and go to Google and type in K-U-B-A-R-K. And be sure you read the footnotes, because that's where you find the behavioral scientific research actually discussed.
And there's another way of phrasing this. Isn't it called no-touch torture?
Yeah, it is, because in effect it's counterintuitive. For 2,000 years, torture was a formal part of Western judicial proceedings from ancient Greece, particularly ancient Rome, medieval Europe, right up until the 18th century, all right? And that torture always involved the most brutal kinds of torture imaginable, physical torture. you know, hot irons, the rack, the wheel, the Iron Maiden, things like this. You know, just iron implements to pull and tear and puncture the body. All right, and the thing about this torture, the CIA's torture, is it leaves no scars. In fact, this CIA psychological torture paradigm is extraordinarily perverse. It is elusive, resilient, adaptable, and destructive.
Leaves no trail.
That's the elusive part. Right now, there are over 100 torture treatment centers across the world, and if somebody is physically tortured, they can be medically examined, and they can make a medical and then legal determination that torture has taken place. It's very clear. It's open and shut case. A torturer will go to jail if he or she can be prosecuted. But the psychological torture leaves no trace, so it's elusive. And even when people investigate, they disagree about what actually constitutes severe psychological pain because it's all so subjective, in the mind of the victim and in the eyes of the investigator. The second thing is that it's resilient. Psychological torture is wrapped in this society in all kinds of euphemisms. It has a kind of appealing scientific gloss that makes it quite acceptable to policymakers in Washington. And the idea that it's not brutal and physical makes it palatable to the American public. And we call this torture light, okay? That distinctive American euphemism for it. So in this country, we don't think that torture is really, that psychological torture is really torture. But in fact, the medical evidence, and it's clear, the medical evidence says that psychological torture is far more painful, inflicts far more lasting damage on the victim than does physical torture. The Center for the Torture Victims in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the oldest center for treatment of torture victims in the United States, has 8,000 cases right now. And they've concluded from their 8,000 cases that, and this is based on actually trying to treat and help people, that it's far harder to treat and cure somebody who's been subjected to psychological torture than it is to treat and cure somebody who's been subjected to physical torture.
And why is that?
Because the physical torture once it actually starts, no matter how horrific the violence, is less painful, it's known, than the fear of it. It's the fear, okay? It's also, there are techniques that simulate death. So when you're being physically tortured, you're suffering pain, but you're alive. But one of the tactics and techniques of psychological torture is to simulate death. The most common CIA technique is a thing called waterboarding. Now, when the head of the CIA, Portergos, testified in front of Congress late last year, he's called waterboarding a professional interrogation technique. After the U.S. Senate last December supposedly banned torture, the Justice Department, under Antonio Gonzalez, anonymously released information to the Washington Post saying that as far as they were concerned, this congressional prohibition did not prohibit waterboarding. Now, waterboarding is a cruel medieval torture technique. It's actually been revived by the CIA because it's actually, although it doesn't leave physical scars. Let me explain what it is. Waterboarding is you lie the victim down and you elevate the feet above the head, and you then pour water down the throat and you fill up the lungs. And the victim thinks that they're drowning. The body actually thinks it's drowning because you are. Your lungs are filled with water, even though you're high and dry. Your mind has this terrible fear of death, and it is the mind telling the body that it's dying, and it is one of the most incredibly painful tortures imaginable. And then they simply pound on the lungs, and you vomit out the water, and you're alive, but you've thought you've died. And the CIA uses this as a technique. Now, the American Justice Department today says that this is not torture. I have in my possessions a book I cite in my book, published in 1541 in Paris, okay? Now, back in the 1500s, they knew their torture. And this is called, they actually have an engraving of this exact same technique with a magistrate sitting before a victim, and there's a pitcher pouring water down his throat, and the plate is labeled Torturae Gallicae Ordinariae, in Latin, translated, Standard French Torture. Now, in the 16th century, 400 years ago, they called that torture. Today, the U.S. Justice Department says, no, not torture.
And how do they, aside from saying it's not, is there a definition that they provide of torture that this doesn't fit into?
Yes, exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. You said you're an attorney, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. Okay, you learned something in law school more than how to, you know.
Raytheon tracks. Yes, indeed. It's all a matter of the legal definitions. Look, in 1994, when President Clinton sent the UN Anti-Torture Convention to Congress for ratification, he accompanied that ratification with four detailed paragraphs of what are called reservations. That means we ratify this treaty except, or we will follow the treaty and we'll do everything except, okay? Now, those four detailed paragraphs of reservation were all focused on one word, just one word in the 26 printed pages of the UN Anti-Torture Convention, and that word was mental. Basically, what we did is we said we agree, accept that physical torture is torture. But then they wrote these reservations in a way that exempted the CIA's torture techniques with this sensory disorientation and self-inflicted pain, exempted that from the effect of the UN treaty. So, in effect, we stretched the boundaries of what constitutes psychological torture. That's why when Condoleezza Rice, late last year, went to Europe and said, you know, we don't torture, and President Bush says we don't torture, there should be a little footnote that says, torture as defined by the reservations to the UN Anti-Torture Convention as passed by Congress in 1994. So we say we don't torture because we mean we don't engage in physical torture, and the Europeans, the UN, indeed the rest of the world, says, no, you do torture because psychological torture is torture.
And isn't there also physical torture that we do as well?
Well, one of the problems of this, okay, is that once you open the door, okay, you fall down the slippery slope, and let me explain how and why. Torture is one of those things we don't understand. Sure, we know the techniques, but we don't understand how it destroys the victim, and we, above all, don't understand the perverse appeal that it has to the perpetrators. From my work with perpetrators, and I've interviewed a fair number of torturers, particularly in the Philippines where I did much of my work. I looked at the transmission of the CIA torture technique to the Philippines and wrote a book about that before my current book. And what I found was that the torture is a transactional experience, that when you're dealing with the innocents in particular, it will inflict scars that can destroy, damage a human psyche, sometimes destroy it for life, okay? And in equal measure, just as the victim's mind and ego is destroyed, the ego and the psyche of the perpetrator is inflated, and they emerge empowered, Nietzschean supermen who think that they can sweep all before them, and they never repent, they never apologize, they feel no shame, they feel no guilt. And that's, I think, and this is speculative, I think the torture taps into some deep, uncharted recess of the human mind where the capacity for procreation and destruction all coincide. And I think it has a powerful, almost erotic appeal to both the perpetrators and, above all, to the powerful who order the torture to take place.
Do we find that most of these torturers are men?
Yes, but not exclusively.
And I need you to hold that thought, please. We have to take a break. I am talking to Alfred McCoy. He is the author of A Question of Torture. He's a professor of history at University of Wisconsin in Madison, and he's joining us from Madison. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us. We have to take a break.
Grandma's hands used to hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hands pick me up each time I fell. Grandma's.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the wake-up call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck.
Before you go to the movies, go to Radio Free St. Louis. Find out what's worth seeing and what's not worth the bother. Join Dave Lenahan and Mark Glass for What's Good New at the Movies, a regular feature of Today's Solutions, Friday afternoons at 4:10 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Also online at www.blacktie-stlewis.com.
In the zone, AutoZone.
When it's time for a brake job, AutoZone is your brake headquarters with everything you need to do the job right, including helpful advice and great prices. Replacing your brakes is easy, and AutoZone has a full line of brakes to fit practically any car and any budget, including Duralast brakes, brakes that are built to last and backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Don't risk your safety with worn out brakes. Change your brakes and get in the zone. AutoZone.
No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
The Missouri Department of Conservation offers Let's Play a Possum, a chance to learn about North America's only marsupial through story, song, and craft. The event will be held February 25th and 28th at the Dennis and Judith Jones Visitor Center in Forest Park. The program is geared for children aged 3 through 6. If time and weather permits, the class may even venture outdoors to search for opossum habitats. To register, call 314-877-1309. News you can stick in your pouch from Radio 920 WGNU.
Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Travel and a rough way to go. Said it's a hard road to travel and a rough way to go. But I can't turn back. My heart is fixed, my mind's made up. I'll never stop, and my faith will see me through.
Oh, welcome back. To the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. My number is 1-877-920-WGNU. I am talking to Alfred McCoy. He is the author of A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. He is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, and he's joining us from Madison. Welcome back.
Thank you, Liz.
We were talking about men versus women as torturers.
Yeah, I think what we're finding is that probably men are more inclined to do it, but that women, it turns out, are actually some very effective and lethal torturers at all levels, both actual interrogators and also commanders. And as the women are more and more in the military, it turns out that they can do this as well. But we don't have enough information to know what the differences will be.
Well, would we call the woman that was with the two thumbs up, Lindsay, would we call her a torturer?
Yes, she was a haplessly, kind of in. Yes, she was in the system. What they were doing. When you look at those Abu Ghraib photographs, what you see in there is you see the two tiers of the CIA torture paradigm. Let me explain. As I said earlier, that paradigm is adaptable, and every extended application produces innovation. Now, it's been revived since 2001 for the War on Terror, and what's happened is Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense, turned Guantanamo into a kind of a torture laboratory, a behavioral science laboratory. He appointed a man named General Jeffrey Miller to be commander. And General Jeffrey Miller began experimenting with expanded interrogation techniques. Now, the original CIA torture paradigm is an assault on sensory receptors, the universal sensory receptors that every human being has, sensitivity to light and dark, to silence and noise, to food or lack of food, and sense of time, and also to simple physical pain. So, what they did at Guantanamo was they experimented to customize and to increase the force of the paradigm, and they played around cultural sensitivity, and they discovered Arab sensitivity, cultural sensitivity to issues of gender and sexuality, and also fear of dogs. And then they went further. General Miller ordered the creation of what were called behavioral science consultation teams, and they had actual trained psychologists participating in the interrogation, not trying to help the victims, but to increase the intensity of the breakdown, to basically inflict pain upon them. These are qualified health professionals that are inflicting pain on people that should be, I guess, patients. Okay. Now, what they found was individual weaknesses in psyches, such as attachment to mother or fear of dark, and they put the three together to create a three-tier lethal psychological torture technique: attack on sensory receptors, second, attack on cultural sensitivity, and third, attack on individual psyches. The result is then a perfection of the CIA's psychological torture paradigm. Now, this was developed at Guantanamo, and it reached Abu Ghraib two ways. One, that there was a military intelligence unit, the 519th, that was based in Bagram, and they were inside the joint military CIA interrogation center at the old air base. And their military intelligence officers at all levels learned CIA torture techniques as they worked alongside with them. That unit was then transferred in July 2003 to Abu Ghraib, and that unit that came from Bagram, where they actually killed two prisoners, tortured them to death, that unit set up the basic interrogation doctrine at Abu Ghraib. Then, in August 2003, as the Iraqi insurgency was starting, we had no intelligence, General Miller flew in from Guantanamo, and he brought with him all of the advanced torture techniques he developed at Guantanamo. And he gave them to the U.S. commander for Iraq, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez. And General Sanchez issued a series of orders for expanded interrogation techniques beyond those allowed in the U.S. Army Field Manual. And those techniques are basically two tiers of the CIA paradigm. One, self-inflicted pain. Two, sensory disorientation. And three, attack on Arab cultural sensitivity, particularly to dogs. They brought in a canine unit, a dog unit, and they used the dogs to attack this imagined Arab male cultural sensitivity to dogs. So when you look at all those Abu Ghraib photos and you get beyond the revulsion, okay, I mean, they're really disgusting, okay? They're repulsive, and we should be repulsed. Now, it's my job to actually get kind of clinical about it. I don't like it, but I have to do it. I look at those photos, and you look at it, and what you see is a lot of people are in uncomfortable positions. They're crouching, or they're standing straight upright with their arms extended. Or in one of the new photos, the man is short shackled. His arms are high behind his back, and he's shackled to, looks like, a door lock.
And there's also one that is hung upside down from a bed.
Yeah, that's right. That's another. Those are all stress positions, okay? That's self-inflicted pain. The other thing you'll see in the photos is everybody's hooded. Now, that's the denial of light. That's sensory deprivation, sensory disorientation. And if you read the more detailed descriptions of what goes on at Guantanamo and at Abu Ghraib, in the sensory realm, what they're doing is that they do denial of sensory stimulus. That's to say, you're put in a dark room, and then you get a surfeit, an excessive sensory stimulus. You're put before bright lights or strobe lights. You're denied all sound, and then suddenly lots of rock music. So it's sensory denial, sensory excess, sensory denial, sensory excess. And they play this, and they intermingle some stress positions. They give you some dogs. They strip you naked. You have the little fake simulated sexuality. I mean, they scramble it all up, and it's the genius, the art of this, the perverse art of this, is to somehow coordinate this in a way that breaks the person down.
What do they get? What is the result of all of this?
Well, that's a very good question. You generally get very bad information. What we found time and time again, look, in the 3rd century A.D., 1,800 years ago, a Roman jurist named Ulpian wrote a commentary on legal procedures in Rome. And at that point, any slave brought before a Roman court had to be tortured. Otherwise, it was felt that a slave's testimony was unreliable without torture. So Roman jurists had lots of experience of torture. And Ulpian said, look, he said, torture is a difficult and dangerous thing. The strong will resist and the weak will say anything to end the pain. And that's what we found. At the start of the War on Terror, the CIA took control of a man named Al Libby, and they waterboarded him. the technique I talked about earlier, and they use other of these techniques on him. And he then gave evidence or gave information stating that Al-Qaeda had received training in chemical and biological weapons, weapons of mass destruction, from Saddam Hussein's government. In February 2003, to his undying shame, Colin Powell, Secretary of State Colin Powell, went before the United Nations, and he said, "We have reliable, verified intelligence that Al-Qaeda has received training in chemical and biological warfare from Saddam Hussein's government. That's one reason why we got to invade this country." Now, a year later, early 2004, the CIA issued an internal report branding this same man, Al-Libi, a fabricator, all right, and saying that all of the information he'd given was unreliable. And the reason it was unreliable, by the way, and the CIA didn't say this, was because it had been tortured out of him. So, yes, we get information. Now, look, one thing we have to realize is, I think, behind all great crimes, and what the Bush administration has done on torture, I would consider a crime. Behind all great crimes, there lies an even greater crime, and that's human stupidity. This was all stupid. This did not have to happen. I've argued, and I argue in my book, A Question of Torture, that psychological torture is a distinctively American form of torture. But there's another distinctively American form of torture called empathetic interrogation. Now, this was a technique that was developed by the U.S. Marine Corps during World War II in the Pacific Campaign. Now, back then, we thought the Japanese were fanatics, that they believed in the divinity of the emperor, that they would never break, and that, by God, if we wounded them on the battlefield, a lot of soldiers felt that you had to shoot them dead because they would rise almost from the dead to bite you or throw a grenade at you or something, you know. Everything we think about Al-Qaeda today, we thought about the Japanese soldiers back then. The U.S. Marine Corps found with empathetic interrogation, that's to say, interrogators fluent in Japanese, could pick up soldiers on islands like Tinian and Saipan, and in 24 hours have that most difficult form of intelligence, complete order of battle intelligence on the Japanese army on those islands within 24 hours by just talking to them empathetically. Now, the FBI, after World War II, adopted this technique, and they perfected it. So, when the Al-Qaeda bombed our embassies in East Africa in the 1990s, the FBI was the lead agency. They made the arrests. They did empathetic interrogation. They extracted some of our best intelligence about Al-Qaeda. They brought these people before courts of law, U.S. federal courts, where they confessed to their crimes, and they're now in U.S. federal prisons. It worked. But at the start of the war on terror, when the FBI, as it had for the previous 60 years, 1942 to 2002, they had charge of counterintelligence. The Bush administration knew the FBI will not and would not torture, so they lost control of counterintelligence. They lost control of the Al-Qaeda captives. And the Bush administration gave those Al-Qaeda captives to the CIA because the CIA has and will torture.
What? And we have to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about oversight. Has there been any oversight of this in anybody's administration? I'm Liz Brown. I'm talking to Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, Alfred McCoy, and he is the author of A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War to the War on Terror. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I'll be back after this break. Please stay with us.
Them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama.
It's time to register for the free DNA Heritage and Ancestry Analysis valued at $250 to be given away Friday morning on the Wake Up Call, courtesy of African Ancestry, Inc. Be the 10th caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box for the drawing Friday morning during the 8 o'clock hour. The 10th caller right now at 454-6660 gets registered. So, good luck. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Washington. The administration has spent $400 million on an advertising campaign to convince low-income senior citizens to enroll in the new Medicare Part D prescription drug program. Of the 8 million people who are eligible, only about 1.5 million have actually signed up so far. But it appears that the campaign has appealed to more people who aren't eligible for the plan
And now a lot of time and resources are being devoted to weeding out applicants who do not qualify. This has caused backlogs in processing applications for those who are eligible, which in turn has produced a lot of frustration. The main reason so many people are not being allowed to sign up is because they have more than the $11,500 limit in assets, not including their home or their car. And Dateline New York. The Bush administration has said for some time now that home ownership by minorities is part of the proof that its economic policies are successful. But now, there's evidence that minority homeowners in a large number of large urban areas are suffering foreclosures at an unbelievable pace. The New York Times did an analysis of foreclosure filings and some other housing data. It is revealed that black home ownership dropped slightly last year. Plus, there's more bad news on the horizon because black home buyers have been more likely to enter into costly high-interest mortgages, and many of those will see interest rates rise even higher over the next 2 years. These high-rate loans are called subprime loans and are made to people who lenders feel have less than the best credit position. They also carry higher fees and have prepayment penalties. That results in making them very expensive to refinance if you do find a better deal. This is your wake-up call Global News Update. No more calls for the drawing right now. We have our winner. No more calls for the drawing at this time. We have our winner. Thank you.
Did you hear? Jenny Peterson is celebrating Mardi Gras, New Orleans style. I'm Susan Smith-Harmon. Join me as we hook up with Jenny Friday at 1. She'll give us a GNU perspective of the rebuilding of the Crescent City live from New Orleans. That's Susan Smith-Harmon and Jenny Peterson reporting on progress in the Big Easy this Friday at 1 on WGNU, where we're discussing what matters most to you.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's go take on the day.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen with Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU. Just letting you know that we are moving to a new time from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Thursday morning, dedicated to making you mad or making you think since 1999.
Friday morning at 8, Gina Page, president of African Ancestry Incorporated, returns to the wake-up call to talk more about the DNA analysis of ethnic heritage and ancestry offered by her company. Plus, all week long, we are registering listeners for one free DNA analysis test courtesy of African Ancestry. The winner will be announced during the interview Friday morning. And to add more high drama, Liz Brown herself has had this test done, and her results will be revealed Friday as well. So don't miss all of the excitement Friday morning at 8 with Gina Page of African Ancestry Incorporated right here on the award-winning Wake Up Call. Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to the author of A Question of Torture, Alfred McCoy. He's a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, and he's joining us from Madison, Wisconsin. And Alfred McCoy, oversight. Has there been any kind of oversight to this torture?
Yes, there has. It's not been successful. Over the past 30 years, Congress has conducted four major investigations into CIA torture or manifestations thereof, and Congress has tried on three occasions now, to prohibit torture. In each case, with the investigations, what happens is the press exposes, Congress investigates, there's no response from the public, and it tends to fade away. The prohibitions have been even more problematic, and the latest, of course, is last December. we can talk about that. But what happens in each case is Congress discovers some abuse. In the early 1970s, it was that the U.S. Office of Public Safety, which was a U.S. government aid program training police across the world, that they were engaged in torture training in Brazil. So Congress destroyed that office, destroyed that program, zeroed it out in the budget and wiped it off the books. And then, of course, in the mid-1990s, 1994, Congress ratified the UN Anti-Torture Convention, but they did so in ways that allowed torture to continue, because Congress basically prohibited physical torture but didn't prohibit psychological torture, at least completely. And they left a little loophole there. Most recently, what's happened is that beginning in July last year, Senator McCain introduced an amendment to the defense appropriation that contained language that would prohibit any cruel or inhumane treatment of detainees anywhere in the world by any U.S. government official. That meant either a military officer or a CIA interrogator. And the Bush administration, in a brilliant exercise in political manipulation, twisted that prohibition of torture into, in fact, a kind of legalization of the controversial doctrines that the Bush White House had used to justify torture for the previous 3 years under the War on Terror. And it was very skillful the way the White House did that. And if you want, I can explain how they did it.
If you could.
Oh, sure. Okay, look, at the start of the War on Terror, the White House came up with, right at the start of War on Terror, on September 11, 2001, President Bush addressed the nation, our shaken nation, right after the attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. And then, once the cameras were turned off, he turned to his counterintelligence officers inside the White House and he said, "I don't care what the international lawyers say, we are going to kick some ass." That's a quote. And for the next few months, the White House legal staff and lawyers in the Justice Department worked to translate the president's otherwise unlawful orders into legal doctrine. And to do this, they came up with three controversial legal arguments. First, that the president, as commander-in-chief and the head of the so-called unitary executive, has the authority to override all laws and treaties. Second, and this is done by the Justice Department. Second, that should CIA interrogators be charged legally, charged before the courts with torture, that there is a defense, and they came up with two defenses. The first one went to intention. If a CIA interrogator inflicted pain, but his intention was information, not pain, then he could walk out of court. He had a defense. Second, what is pain? The UN and U.S. UN Anti-Torture Convention, U.S. law, defines torture as the infliction of severe psychological or physical pain. Now, what does severe mean? In a notorious memo, the Assistant Attorney General, Jay Bybee, who's now a federal judge, said that from his reading of the law, that this pain could be right up to organ failure, okay, which meant right up to the point of death.
And he's a judge now.
He's a judge for life in the federal court system. He rewarded, like all these perpetrators, with promotions. That's a process of impeachment. That's another topic. Then the third controversial legal doctrine was put forward by another Justice Department employee, and that was very simple, that Guantanamo was not U.S. territory, and thus we could confine the detainees at the U.S. naval base on Guantanamo, and they would be beyond the courts. Now, last summer, when McCain introduced his prohibition on torture as an amendment to the defense bill, the Bush White House, first of all, fought it with loopholes. They sent Dick Cheney, the vice president, to Capitol Hill to jawbone McCain to get him to withdraw the bill, and McCain refused. Then Cheney sat down with McCain and said, "Look, you got to write an exemption for the CIA. You got to exempt them so that the CIA is allowed to torture." And again, Senator McCain refused. So then the White House they leaned on McCain and they got the first thing. They got him to write in an amendment or a revision to his amendment in which he said that there was a possible defense of CIA interrogators accused of torture, again on this grounds of intention. If they did something illegal, but it had not been their intention to do so, they were not they thought that the orders to do it were legal, then they can walk, okay? The next thing was the presidential doctrine. When President Bush signed that McCain's bill into law on December 30th, Friday before New Year's, he sent out an email at 8 o'clock on a Friday night before New Year's. Nobody noticed it, in which he said that I'm signing this legislation, but let me make it my intention clear that as commander-in-chief and as head of the unitary executive, this bizarre neoconservative concept, the unitary executive, I reserve the right to do whatever needs to be done to defend America. In other words, I'll torture if I have to.
If I want to.
If I want to. And then the third thing. As the Bush White House was filling this bill with loopholes, they got a movement conservative, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, to amend McCain's amendment. And what Senator Graham does, he amended it to say that for the purposes of this legislation, the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, is not U.S. territory.
Mm.
So that meant that, in effect, Guantanamo was beyond the reach of U.S. law and U.S. courts. And then Senator Graham added one thing that's the ultimate abomination, I think. He stated that, you know, those military tribunals in Guantanamo, which are right now hearing the cases, the evidence, much of it tortured, extracted from interrogation, coercive interrogation the International Red Cross has deemed to be torture, that the UN has deemed to be torture. All right. As they evaluate that evidence, if they impose a penalty of more than 10 years, and in all likelihood they will on most of the people that appear before them, then the detainees can appeal, a one-time appeal, to the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, and this is the critical part, the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia can consider coerced evidence. They can consider the probative value of tortured testimony. Now, the U.S. Congress has passed a law which, to my reading of things, is a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which was adopted by our founding fathers back in 1791, at a time when the Enlightenment was mounting a major campaign for the prohibition of torture. And as a part of that Enlightenment campaign, the founding fathers wrote into the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment, saying that nobody can self-incriminate. We have the right not to incriminate ourselves in court of law. Now, who incriminates themselves in a court of law? The only circumstances in which that occurred in the 18th century world, somebody who'd been tortured would incriminate themselves. So, in effect, this is a specific prohibition in the U.S. Constitution against torture and against the consideration of tortured testimony by a U.S. court. Now, in that law, the Detainee Treatment Act 2005, passed by the U.S. Congress last December, signed by President Bush on December 30th, there is a provision for a U.S. federal court of appeals to consider the probative value to decide whether or not to use tortured testimony.
And that has to be the last word. Professor, thank you so much. And where can people get your book?
If they want, they can go online to Amazon.com, and you get a 30% discount. It brings it down to about $15, which for a 300-page book is not bad.
It's incredible. A Question of Torture. Alfred McCoy, Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, thank you so much.
Liz, thank you. You were a great interviewer. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Take care now. Bye. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, The Wake-Up Call. I'll be back. Oh, tomorrow's the exciting day. We'll find out what our African ancestry is, what my African ancestry is. I can't wait till tomorrow. Until then, stay strong.
The people who lobbied for peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution. The air will be brother.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Oliver. A protest in Baghdad's Sadr City, one of several in Iraq again today, in the midst of the nation's worst violence in weeks. As many as 90 people may have been killed over the past few days. And now U.S. troops in Iraq are ready to take action.
U.S. military officials say they're prepared to assist if necessary. So far, today's demonstrations reportedly have been peaceful. The explosion that brought down the Golden Dome